And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show, live from Madison, Wisconsin, home of the front lines of the class war, and it looks like victory. A little bit of victory today, according to Pat Sims over at the Wall Street Journal. She says, quote, in her little inner tweet, Wisconsin Dem Senator Chris Larson says today he expects three Republican senators to soon request that the budget repair bill be withdrawn. That means that all of the toxic stuff that we've been talking about that are in this bill, they're talking about withdrawing. Now, you got to look across the country and you've got to see other governors looking to this and go, well, you know, there's some, this is how you do not run a major policy campaign. Scott Walker has pretty much shown his amateur status. He's playing in the little fishbowl out here in the sea, got himself into a whole lot of trouble. And there's talk of a whole lot more trouble coming down, according to, some sources who are looking at this prank phone call. What's interesting, he wouldn't take a phone call from any of the Democrats, but he will take a phone call from a prankster who he believed to be conservative billionaire David Koch. One of the Koch brothers, the billionaire family who's funded many of the ultra extreme conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all those attack groups. That's where the money's coming from. And what's interesting, I gotta be honest, it's amazing to me that you look at the fact that this guy won't take a call from Democrats, but he'll pick up the phone and talk to somebody who believes is David Koch, which right immediately pops into my head. How often is David Koch calling Scott Walker? How much communication are they having? How frequently does this happen? And how much money is going into this guy's pocket? They talked for about at least 20 minutes, which again, kind of, if you're in the middle of the battle of your life as governor of this state, are you going to take 20 minutes out of your day to talk to just anybody? No. You're going to talk to the guy who's filling your coffers. You're going to talk to the guy who's got the messaging machine and can bring tens or 20 or hundreds of buses of thugs here to protest the union people here like they did last Saturday with all these T-Twizzlers who came to town looking for trouble. Every person that I talked to who was here on Saturday said those teabaggers, they were there for trouble. They were hyped up. They were geared up. They had their cameras and their video recorders, and they had everything ready. They wanted, they were praying. In fact, they had, from what I was told, they had been trained on how to get people to react. And amazingly, the people of Wisconsin didn't react. And what I love to hear is the governor say, well, all these people are, from outside of here. They're thugs from outside. No. The nice people of Wisconsin, they took the brow beating that the T-Twizzlers gave them and let them go on their merry way. And, it speaks testaments. It's volumes about how nice these people are and how this is a community thing, not just a special interest thing. As the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media is trying so desperately to frame this, to frame it as, wow, this is just the last throes of special interest. No, these are tens of thousands of working families, tens of thousands of citizens going to their government and saying, hey, this is not what we signed you up for. We wanted you to create jobs. We wanted you to do things that were going to help our economy, not destroy them. And this phone call, you've got to listen to this. Go to our Facebook page, the Rick Smith Show, where working people talk. And we've got the links to we've got the video up there of the phone call. You've got to hear this. It is just, it's absolutely amazing at the calm, at the assuredness, the arrogance of Scott Walker as he went through question after question, and basically laid out the entire plan. like they'd had this conversation time and time again. And, you know, a couple of things really jumped out at me. The first thing that really caught me and grabbed me by the throat, Koch asks the questions. He goes, his statement, well, right. We'll back you any way we can. But what we were thinking, about was the crowds. Plant some troublemakers. We were thinking about planting some troublemakers. And Walker's response was kind of interesting. He goes, the only problem with that, because we thought about it. Let me back up. Because we thought about it. So it's already popped into Walker's mind, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, that, well, we could plant some troublemakers, gin up some trouble, and we can come down with the iron fist and use the National Guard that we threatened to use to put these people in their place. So after he says, we thought about it, he says, the problem with my only gut reaction would be right now the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them, meaning those people. The public's not really fond of this. The teachers union did some polling and focus groups, I think, and found that the public turned on them the minute they closed school down for a couple of days. The guys we've got left are largely from out of the state, and I keep dismissing them in all of my press conferences, saying they're mostly out of state. My only fear would be is if there is a ruckus caused, is that people would scare people into thinking maybe the governor should, settle to avoid these problems. And he goes on to say, well, it's just a bunch of, 60s liberals, let them protest, all that nonsense. But at the end, but amazingly to me, we already thought of that. We thought about that. That's played into their calculus. So going back to, the more things change, the more they're exactly the same. You've got the same kind of people running these offices. And you go down the list. I mean, right from the beginning, he starts off talking about this guy named Tim Cullen, who's a Republican who, he's pretty sure he's got him in his pocket. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. And Koch goes, oh, all right, I'll have to give that man a call. And what's interesting is Walker goes, well, wait a minute. Well, actually, in his case, I wouldn't call him. I'll tell you why. He's pretty reasonable, but he's not one of us. So I would let him be, meaning that he's not willing to play the game that the Koch brothers and the Walkers and the Kasichs and, I dare say the Corbetts and the Daniels are playing. I look at this and it's just amazing stuff. And, then he goes into what his plans are. He's saying, well, we're just going to starve them out. They're going to have to come pick up their paychecks at some point. And, we're going to threaten the workers next week. We're going to send out warning letters that they're all going to be laid off. And all this trickery, all of this deceit, all of this backdoor politic, all of this nonsense that that they've already decided to do, I'm sure months and months and even years ago. But the whole planning trouble thing to me just grabbed me. The other part that I thought was interesting is they've been talking about PATCO too. And as we've been saying on the program, PATCO was that moment during 1981 where businesses said, whoa, wait a minute. That's our guy in the White House. He just gave us the green light to go ahead and crush those workers. So he's talking about PATCO. And it's pretty interesting because he says, basically this was Reagan breaking down the Soviet Union. When the Soviets saw Reagan go after his own workers and what he would do to them, they were afraid of him. And he was trying to take some of that and say, look, that's what we need to do. We need to stand up and be firm here, and we need to take them on and destroy them as we would any of our political enemies, take them into the square and gut them in public. This is what they're trying to do. This isn't about saving the budget. This isn't about helping taxpayers. This isn't about better governance. This isn't about any of that stuff. This is revenge. This is hatred. This is political payback, pure and simple. And I find it quite interesting that you look at the fact that they're talking about in this one piece of legislation, so much destruction, so much toxicity, so much, well, so many handouts. Privatizing their power plants, getting rid of the Badger Care like our adult basic. This destruction of union rights, of really a voice, even though the people have already said we're willing to give whatever needs to be done to balance the budget. I mean, the workers have already said we're willing to chip in. And I always go back to it, and I don't understand it. I really don't. How it is that asking for wealth to be redistributed in a way that benefits everybody and not just a handful. How in the hell is that socialism? But yet, when we've got to pick up all the pieces after the banks and Wall Street and the billionaires like the Koch brothers destroy our economy, somehow, Jake, that is somehow patriotic. Us getting the broom and the shovel and cleaning up all the mess that they've left.
Well, I think the irony is, Rick, I think some of them have overstated their case. I think this is a classic example of the enemy going a bridge too far. He's showing some real cracks. Talking to some people at the rally tonight, Rick, you get the feeling that from the inside, the information is slowly coming out that some of his Republican colleagues aren't necessarily on the same team as he is. They're not as hardcore. They're more centrist, because they are conservative, but they're more centrist conservative. They're getting an awful lot of heat, and they're starting to get cold feet. One thing that Walker said, he's going to wait them out. I think this time is on the side of the workers.
Well, I hope you're right, because, every day you're seeing thousands of people, marching into the Capitol, people who are staying overnight, people who are dedicated to this. And when we come back a little later in the program, I want to talk about the media comments that he made, because, even he admits, fake news on Fox is in their pockets. He's doing all the shows, all the good conservative shows, to keep all of the minions in line, to keep all of the simpletons, right marching down the path towards the end. And what's interesting is the end is for all of us, even the ones who are supporting him. And that's the thing that bothers me, that this fight, and we've seen only a handful of people who have had anything bad to say. And, we saw the teabagger guy walking around, and people were, hey, how you doing? It was just the nicest event here. But at the end of it, we're all in this together. All in this together. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the ads that the governor asked for and some of the help that he asked for from the Koch brothers. Is that legal? We're going to find out from our good friend Irwin Aronson. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With the Congressional Super Committee deadline looming, their work appears to have broken down, with Republicans demanding deep cuts while not agreeing to raise any more revenue from wealthy Americans and corporations. The AFL-CIO is urging Democrats on that committee to stand firm against cutting billions of dollars in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. A solid majority of Americans oppose cuts to those programs and want the rich taxed more to help pay for them.
There is no reason on God's green earth that 15 million people can't be back to work this January if we made a decision as a nation that that was our top priority.
SEIU President Mary Kay Henry. Henry says Americans know in our bones that something is very wrong when many millions of people can't find jobs while the richest 1% grow ever richer. Henry was arrested in a civil disobedience act recently at the Brooklyn Bridge protesting the corporate domination of America and lack of any real agenda for the common good.
People believe that that level of sacrifice and dedication is required in this moment to get our elected officials and CEOs to understand that we need to get back to work in the millions, and that we are capable of a nation as making that happen.
The UAW puts its auto transplant factory organizing campaign into gear and heads straight for the dealers of the targeted automakers. Jesse Russell reports.
The Unite Auto Workers are preparing to bring an effort to organize foreign automakers right to the doorstep of dealers. Organizing U.S. plants for overseas automakers has been one of the primary goals of UAW President Bob King. The union hasn't publicly stated who their first target will be or when the campaign will start. However, at a recent meeting, union leadership stressed that the campaigns at the dealerships would not be pickets. Two of the main targets could be Toyota or Volkswagen. Both of those companies have seen large increases to their U.S. workforce over the last few years. When wages and benefits are calculated, Volkswagen employees make roughly half of the average earned by their counterparts at U.S. automakers.
The Teamsters have scored a big organizing win in Florida. A majority of the nearly 20,000 correctional, probation, and parole officers with the Florida Department of Corrections recently voted to join the Teamsters. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa, who recently won re-election for another term in office, welcomed the Florida Corrections officers to the 1.4 million member Teamsters Union. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
That's what the people here in Madison, Wisconsin are doing and have been doing for the last, week and a half. They've been standing, they've been marching, they've been clapping, dancing, singing, having a festival out here. But they are here for a very good reason, and they all know that. But, you know, at the end of it, they can still have a good time. I think it was Emma Goldman who said, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution." Well, these folks are definitely doing that. You know, the Koch brothers in this state are pretty powerful folks. They gave Scott Walker's campaign $43,000 directly. You remember the Koch brothers gave $1 million to the Republican Gubernatorial Association, the Governor's Association, so they could buy attack ads. It turns out they're spending $320,000 on television ads for this right here. How's that legal? I'm not sure, but that's why we're going to have our good friend Erwin Aronson, our favorite attorney, to come on the program. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for you taking time to be out in the place where God's work is being done, and you and your crew are right there. That's fantastic. I feel almost as if I should be the host and I should interview you tonight, because I need to know what's going on right there in the heartland of America, at the place where ground zero has been reestablished for all of us.
It is absolutely an amazing atmosphere. Tens of thousands of people marching in the streets. And like I said, it is a festive occasion, but people are deadly serious about what they're talking about. They've got they want this governor to walk away from this theft of their rights.
Well, it's understandable, and you're being charitable by calling it a theft of their rights. It certainly looks a lot to me as if somebody in the North is trying to reenact the old South. and we should all be under the thumb of Massa, and Massa looks a whole lot like Governor Walker.
Yeah, or like David Koch. Because
well, that's an interesting one, David Koch. You know the Koch brothers, they inherited their money. They earned it the old-fashioned way, you know?
Yep.
And the Koch brothers are trading in Wisconsin and all around the country on that really wonderful little piece of Supreme Court jurisprudence that was enacted last year called Citizens United, which stands for this insane proposition that corporations are people too. And because we have a right to free speech under the Constitution, as people are allowed to give unbridled amounts of money to support their political agendas.
But let me
That's
ask
what the Koch brothers are doing.
Let me ask you this, Irwin, though. I understand that was the decision. But in this case, if you listen to the call, which, again, I don't know if you've heard, but it's amazing at how at ease Walker is talking with David Koch and is perfectly okay with the fact that one of the Koch brothers just called him out of the blue. But he had the security of knowing that he could ask this billionaire to run ads and spread the message and do the kind of things that Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all of these attack groups have been doing and put out their message. Is that legal that a sitting governor can ask, one of these hate think groups or whatever you want to call them to go run ads for him?
Well, it's certainly, the request itself is certainly not illegal given the breadth of the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. The question about legality is, where was Walker when he did this? Was he in the people's house? Was he sitting in the governor's office on the governor's phone pursuing this political agenda? Because he admitted in that response to what was, in effect, a phony phone call that that's exactly what this was, a political agenda. He was looking for bragging rights because he thought he lit a national fuse for the agenda that they're pursuing, and indeed he's part right. He did light a national fuse, and people are gathering in every corner of the United States right now. But one would think, certainly here in Pennsylvania, we would know because the current governor and former attorney general has prosecuted members of the General Assembly, Democrats and Republicans alike, for using their legislative offices to pursue political business. And if Walker did the same thing, it certainly would be criminal conduct in Pennsylvania, according to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett.
So in bringing up Corbett, the reality is what's going on here in Wisconsin, and what I've been saying all week, this is that the front lines of the class war, if you will, this latest battle in the class war. If things were to go the way Walker wanted them here in Pennsylvania, or I mean here in Wisconsin, I do believe they would surely sweep across the country, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, at some point down the road. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, very clearly, if you listen carefully to the conversation that Governor Walker thought he had with one of the billionaire Koch brothers, he was going down the list of governors, and he didn't get to Pennsylvania in the course of that conversation before the caller who had represented himself to be David Koch moved on in the conversation. But certainly Pennsylvania is at risk. People like Representative Metcalf in Pennsylvania are introducing right-to-work legislation in the Pennsylvania General Assembly even as we speak. The moderate Republican who had been minority chair of the House Labor Committee during the last session when the Democrats had majority control of the State House did not succeed in becoming the chair of the Labor Committee when the Republicans took over. A very different person was placed in that role. And we have some certain issues in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. There are forces at work who have been financed by the same big business community that stands to benefit by this kind of law, this kind of legal approach. It's for somebody like me, it's almost anathematic to refer to it as a law. It is a political agenda. It's not a law. But the danger is here. It's now, and it's real. And I think that's precisely why so many Pennsylvanians have been intrigued enough and excited enough and interested enough and just focused enough to stand in solidarity with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin and in Indiana and in Ohio and in Michigan and in Kansas, where the Koch brothers' headquarters can be found, and are speaking up. I'm reminded tonight, as we are on the verge of day 10 of this, of the Billy Joel song, "We Didn't Light the Fire." They lit this fire.
Yeah.
But it's burning. And it's always been burning, and they just opened it up. And the winds are blowing that fire across the country, and we will face challenges, and we will meet and greet those challenges, not with joy, but certainly with vigilance and diligence, and we're going to overcome these challenges. I keep asking people to help me understand if this Walker guy is to be believed. His story is that we need to do these draconian things like automatically decertify unions and abrogate collective bargaining agreements and compel unions to have elections every single year to be recertified as something having something to do with balancing the budget. And I can't understand it. But what I really can't understand is if he is such a good heads-up, understanding, competent manager, why does he need a law to say no to the labor organizations that exist there? He can't do it himself. He needs the cover of a statute to do that. He doesn't know how to negotiate, or he's afraid to negotiate. He's afraid that even he would give in somehow to reasonable demands, that he needs a law. I ask people to do the mirror image of this. Imagine, if you will, with me for a moment, that if in Wisconsin a liberal Democratic governor was elected and had substantial liberal progressive majorities in the state House and state Senate, and they faced an unbalanced budget. They faced a budget deficit, and the first thing they did was increase unemployment compensation benefits and dramatically liberalize eligibility, and the next thing they did to finance that was to impose a big new tax on corporations doing business there for everybody except maybe a progressive-leaning tech sector that is developing there. And then for good measure, have a ban on corporations and corporate players like the Koch brothers from making political donations without first getting the permission of each and every one of their shareholders so that they can't use their power, their economic power, to repeal the appropriate laws that had just been passed because of a decrepit economy and a declining economy. Imagine what that would be, because that's exactly the mirror image of what Walker has proposed.
Right.
You know?
They'd be calling it exactly what I'm calling this. I don't think this is anything but Machiavellian political payback, taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public.
Well, it's not just taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public. It is also saying that you are going to have that enemy for the rest of the history of the country, and therefore you have to strip that enemy of its right to ever exist again.
Right.
You have to say to working people who have chosen to serve us by being public employees, who protect our children, who serve our parents, who take kids to school on the school bus, who shovel the snow on the streets, that they are a permanent underclass in this society. You know, imagine comparing this to the clarion call of John Kennedy when he was sworn into the presidency of the United States, who recognized that public service was a higher calling and encouraged people to set things aside to adopt that higher calling. Now we have people like Scott Walker who tell us that public service is at one level theft when working people do it, and is a way to make millions when he does it for his corporate raider buddy.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, and again, going back to this idea that this is something about the budget, you know, the unions here have agreed to concessions. They've agreed to numerous furlough days. The workers, you know, they're still willing to chip in and tighten their belts. This isn't about the budget. This isn't about any of that. It's about control. Let me ask you this, Irwin. You know, one of the things that Scott Walker talked about in his phony phone call that he thought was real was the PATCO strike. or was the PATCO firings? I think there should have been a strike, but the PATCO firings that happened, he looked at that as a great thing. And this is one of the first times I think a Republican has come out and said, well, this was a good thing, and it was a good thing we did it, and it's what brought down the Soviet Union. It gave Reagan all this power, you know, because basically he made the Soviets say, well, look what he does to his own people. What do you think he'll do to us? I'm curious, you were heavily involved during the time of the PATCO strike and the firings. Give me a little background on this.
Well, the relationship of this action of Scott Walker's to balancing a budget, candidly, Rick, is somewhat like a dog's relationship to a fire hydrant. And the relationship that his immediate action now has to the PATCO situation is less than non-existent. We need to remember that here, he proposed to balance a budget by doing two sets of things. One was a series of givebacks, takeaways, abrogations, decimations, if you will, of existing collective bargaining agreements with public sector employees, representatives. In the PATCO situation, Reagan just fired everybody. PATCO never offered to deal with those concessions. Concessions were never on the table. Here, Walker has this situation where he asked for concessions. The labor organizations representing their members have announced that they'll accept those concessions, and he still says he has to destroy their organizations. Like, these are two very different things. And the fact of the matter is that, if the truth be told, Reagan's action did do something, and it did the same kind of something that Scott Walker is trying to effectuate, and that is bring Reagan closer to his corporate sponsor buddies, just like Walker's trying to get closer to his corporate sponsor buddies. But it didn't do anything for air traffic control. It made the airways less safe, and they remain less safe now, 31 years later. It caused chaos in the skies. It caused chaos in the country. And, you know, the Soviet Union did come down, but it had precious little to do with Ronald Reagan. You know, a speech that said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, wasn't exactly the same as Jack Kennedy standing at that wall on the other side and saying, Ich bin ein Berliner. This was not a visionary political step. This was a crude, ham-fisted punch in the face to people who had served their country.
I agree. You know, here's the thing. I want to bring this back home to Pennsylvania, this whole scenario here. Here, the reports that I'm getting is they have a third Republican senator who wants the bill withdrawn and starting to start over. I look at Indiana, where the governor there and the Republicans have agreed to withdraw the right to work bill, but the Democrats in Indiana are saying, we want the vouchers off the table as well. So bringing this back to Indiana, to Pennsylvania, you see what's going on here in Wisconsin, there in Indiana. What can we help our Democratic minority accomplish? When we've seen that the minority parties in both of these states have had some success.
Well, I think that you have to recognize that in Pennsylvania, and this may be true for the other jurisdictions as well, the other states as well, but I'm not sure because I'm not familiar enough. The Republican Party in Pennsylvania right now is under the yoke of a tyranny of its own minority. Many of the leadership of the Republican Party, particularly in the State House of Representatives, are not from the mainstream of Pennsylvania's Republican Party. And as a labor movement, I iterate and reiterate that while I happen to be a Democrat, we are Democrats and we are Republicans. We support our friends and we oppose our enemies, regardless of their political affiliation.
Correct.
And so it's really not a question of what can the minority party do. It's a question about what can a majority of right-thinking, contemplative Pennsylvania legislators, Democrats and Republicans, do to stop and hold back the tyranny of the minority and use that tyranny in its best form as Americans to not only stop this evisceration of the right of one sector of society to live by another sector of society, but to move the ball forward, to advance our society, to do something, imagine, make progress. Make progress for all the things that government exists to take care of. Government, of course, exists to take care of things that we can't take care of on our own. We can't adequately take care of educating our children on our own. That's why we have a public school system. It should be the great equalizer, the great leavener, if you will, in a democratic society. And maybe, just maybe, this helps us down that road. Maybe this situation helps us to deal with the idea that we're facing this absurdity of wanting to divest the citizens of Pennsylvania, the shareholders, if you will, of Pennsylvania, of a very successful business that brings in $400 million a year to our state treasury, the state wine and spirit store system. Maybe we have some opportunities here, but maybe what we need to do is keep our eyes open and our heads up and recognize that we happen to be blessed with, in Wisconsin, for example, 14 good and true, loyal Democratic senators who are standing up with us on this issue. But there are also two Republican senators, I understand, in Wisconsin, who are standing up with us on this issue, and now possibly a third.
Right.
That doesn't make this a Republican issue. This makes this a lunatic issue.
Excellent, okay? Excellent point.
And Scott Walker is a lunatic. When you reach for the big brass ring 6 or 8 weeks into your first real major political foray in your life, you better hope you catch it, because it's a very long and rapid fall.
Good point. Erwin, I appreciate your thoughts, your comments. Always great to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you, and please keep us posted on what's going on at what I call Ground Zero, and we'll see you back here safe and sound, I'm sure, real soon, but don't leap too early, because we need to have the real reports, and we get those real reports from the Rick Smith Show.
Thanks so much, Erwin. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This holiday season, how about having an Earth dinner? Not that you'd eat Earth, but that you and others would gather around the table to celebrate the bounty of our good green Earth. This is not just another meal, but a festive opportunity to have friends and family revel in the culture of food. Most of us don't realize that our dinner tells many stories, embodying our personal histories, family memories, music, art, and other connections besides our tummies. To help reawaken those cultural links in a way that can be tasty, touching, and fun, the folks at Organic Valley Family of Farms have come up with the novel idea of Earth Dinners. The concept simply involves throwing some sort of dinner party at which food is not merely consumed, but also is the focus of table talk, reminiscing, singing, laughing, game playing, and whatever else you can dream up. It can be a potluck dinner, a buffet, a five-course gourmet meal, a backyard barbecue, whatever suits you. The key is to know something about the food being served, where it came from, the history of some of its ingredients, songs written about it, and so on. The goal is to get everyone connecting in some personal or cultural way to the dinner as it progresses. Ask guests to tell about their very first food memory, or to recall any family member who was a farmer or a jolly cook. Invite people of diverse backgrounds and all ages. Ask a farm family to join you, or a cheesemaker, or others involved in producing food. Then, eat, talk, enjoy. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help you get started, Organic Valley's website offers a sort of Earth Dinner Starter Kit. It includes tips on everything from menus to party favors, as well as providing reports on successful dinners that others have put together. Check it out at www.earthdinner.org. That's earthdinner.org. And have a good time. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
That is absolutely the absolute truth. As people are standing together, as people are rising up, as they are fighting back, we're seeing success all across the country. You look at Indiana; they've decided to pull the right to work legislation. And in Ohio, I've heard there's talk of that they're changing their bill, SB5, to take the collective bargaining attack out of it. In Pennsylvania, we're not seeing those attacks yet, and maybe we won't. Maybe they will have learned the lesson from here in Wisconsin that politically, this isn't going to fly. That the people actually want to have a voice on the job. That the people actually want to become part of a union. And you know, the people over at Fake News at Fox, they never stop, never. Because yesterday we talked about the USA Today Gallup poll that was released and that said 61% of the people oppose what Walker is doing. They oppose the stripping of collective bargaining rights away. They oppose stealing these rights away from workers. They oppose it. So what does Fake News on Fox do? They put up a big graphic on their scene and it says that 61% of the people favor stealing collective bargaining rights. Oh, they're thrilled to death with it. And during the discussion, that Kilmeade, you ever seen that guy? He asked Robert Zimmerman if President Obama was taking a big risk by opposing Walker's law. And Zimmerman responded by saying that Obama was speaking up for the mainstream of our country and the mainstream of Republican governors who are not siding with Governor Walker. And Kilmeade said, well, I think Gallup, a relatively mainstream poll, has a different view. And he came out with the numbers. Said, well, you know, they're all in favor of stealing it away. And, of course, he's wrong. Dead wrong. But, again, the people who are the Fox, the Fake News on Fox listeners, the viewers that they have, they're not going to check it. And they're going to take it at face value because that's how they are. And I mean, you know, are we surprised? Are we really surprised that Fox News does this? And, oh, it just, the thing is this kind of stuff happens so frequently. Either they've hired the last guy in the journalism class. They hired the guy with ADD who cannot keep his mind on anything. And he screws up everything. Either they've hired him or they're doing this stuff on purpose. It's one or the other. And I'm saying they do it on purpose.
No, they absolutely do. If I can comment on the governor's so-called knowledge of the people who are coming into this state for the organizing, the organizing efforts going on here in Madison. I mean, to really infer that most of these people are from out of state, just to give you an idea how far off base he was. I mean, you and I, since we've been here, Rick, we've been going to demonstrations. First time in 3-4 days, I was lucky to actually get, you know, in the inner sanctum tonight. And it started about 5, and they started their rally. And about 6 o'clock, after about an hour of the rally, all of a sudden, here comes this policeman's group. Out of nowhere, a couple dozen of them with signs, cops Cops for Labor, and all of a sudden there's this huge outpouring of noise, and the place went nuts. Five minutes later, and they were still chanting and singing. You know how it goes, on and on and on. It's a great experience, actually. But this old man was getting tired after about 20 minutes of that. But my point is this. There was actually, and I think our listeners would be interested in this, there was actually a unionized doctors group that came in.
Yep.
And I didn't even realize that in this area they had them. So for this governor to say that these are outside agitators, these are doctors and policemen, two of the most respected professions, you know, in the country, from right here. But yet, here's the governor saying it's outside agitators. I can guarantee you that is not so. We met a few. We did meet a few. We met a few union guys. No, we met a few union guys from Chicago, a couple here and a couple there, but the vast majority are from Wisconsin, I guarantee you.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. If you want to contact us, we're having phone trouble here. If you want to contact us, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will get your email up on the air, and we'd love to hear from you from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
I got a
all these folks here, they're absolutely fired up. I got to tell you, today we were over at the Capitol again. A rally, a chance of this is what democracy looks like. All of the people coming together peacefully, having their voice heard. An amazing, amazing time. And what I found most interesting is that the working people of this festival, if you will, I hesitate to call it a protest. I mean, these are citizens of Wisconsin who've come to their government and said, "Hear us," and they have come, and amazingly, this is what democracy looks like. These are families who came, and you know what they did? They set up a child care area on the first floor of the Capitol building for the citizens who are here, who brought their children, who want to get into the as close as they can get, who want to be a part of it. They've got a child care area. That, my friends, is what democracy is. It's people deciding what they need and how they're going to go about fulfilling those needs. And this is a lesson that I think Scott Walker and people like Daniels and Kasich and our guy, Tom Corbett, have to think about. What are the things that the citizens of Pennsylvania demand of their government? How do we provide them? How do we pay for them? Not, I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and I'm going to go after my political enemy at all costs. Because that's what this is. That's all this is, pure and simple.
Did you notice, Rick? And I notice it more and more and more. There's quite a few groups over there that are providing food free for these people. They're so well organized that they're actually providing free. I mean, it was the last mass demonstration that you saw people handing out food. I mean, it might sound trite to some people, but these people are well organized. You can say something else. You know, if you would go in a time warp, back in the 60s, I understand Madison was really the hotbed of anti-war demonstrations. That demonstration we were at tonight, you could probably go back in the 60s, given the young people, given the tone of their dress, given the way it was carried on. It's actually a throwback, and it's not just a demonstration. It's kind of like a happening, and people get involved in that, and it's a great feeling to just be part of that.
And, you know, again, going back to this idea that this is such a peaceful event, that these folks, they're here to have their voices heard, not to cause trouble. Now, the mainstream media, they want this trouble. They want something negative to happen. The Tea Party, they came on Saturday with their goons and their cameras trying to cause problems. And, you know, I look at it in Indiana where this guy, you know, he was with CWA and had these two kids, really, I mean, they're early 20s, in his face, screaming at him, pointing their camera in his face, and just screaming at him that he's a thug and all of this stuff. And they clip a short segment out of the video where evidently he went to move his sign to block the camera, and somehow the little handheld cell phone camera that they had hit the ground. You know, and the guy wanted no part of them, but they kept at him. They kept picking at him. And the guy didn't hit him. I would have, which is why I don't generally go to these things. Some little smart, again, FCC rules.
Imagine that.
Some little snot like the two of them would have come into my face and stuck a camera in my face and start pointing their finger in my face. One, I had snapped off their finger and shoved that camera where the sun don't shine. But that would have gotten us into trouble, and that would have gotten the kind of negative exposure that these thugs want. Because in a situation like this, it's whoever causes the trouble. And again, you know, the governor here said he thought about drumming up some trouble. It was on his mind. We already thought about that, he said, when the fake Koch brother said, hey, you know, why don't we drum up some trouble? Why don't we send in some people to cause some trouble? Now, you look at down in Atlanta, for instance. Down in Atlanta, SEIU was holding some rallies at the state capitol. And interestingly enough, there was a group of, well, again, you go back to this and you just, it's almost criminal in my mind. This group called Free Republic, they're one of these way, way out there right-wing groups. They had a memo that they sent out in a post on their webpage that said, Atlanta Tea Party and many other groups facing off the SEIU thugs on Wednesday. It said members of the various Tea Party, 912, and freedom-oriented folks in the Atlanta area will be assembling in the vicinity of the Georgia State Capitol this coming Wednesday after 4 p.m., we'll be providing balance to the ravings of the passengers aboard the SEIU thug bus, which is scheduled to vomit forth its stooges at the same place and time. if you want to join us for the three-hour drive to Atlanta, come on. Now, they go on to say, and again, this is one of those amazing things that grabs you by the throat and goes, this is scary times. They write the advice that attendees are requested to be flexible in your attire. You know, you got to be flexible in your attire because there appears to be some regulations, armed protests on Washington Street side of the Capitol. So you need to be flexible in your attire. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We'll attempt, but no promises to get some additional clarity regarding the situation. So, you know, they're encouraging their people to, you know, to arm up, bring your guns, boys. We're going after the thug bus. When, you know, I wonder if these folks looked in the mirror. It's this kind of stuff that scares me. When you get these crazy right-wing groups out there who think, oh, we're gonna show them, we're going to bring our guns. And I know there are some who'd say, well, maybe the SEIU people should have guns. And, well, that's how you end up like Libya. And, oh, that's a bit extreme, Rick. Well, you know, I look at Indiana. Jeff Cox, a deputy attorney general for the state of Indiana. He's got his viewpoints about what's going on here in Wisconsin. So in response to a Mother Jones tweet this weekend reporting that riot police might be used to clear the protesters from the Capitol building in Madison, Cox tweeted back, use live ammunition. Think about that for a second. Cox has been one of these people who he's held his position that protesters should be killed when confronted on Twitter by Mother Jones's Adam Weinstein, writing that against thugs physically threatening legally elected state legislators and governor, you're right, I advocate deadly force. And it almost sounds to me as you go through some of this stuff, because this guy's really way out there on the fringe. He has had a long record of inflammatory rhetoric against people like Robert Reich and especially SEIU, who he's called brown shirts, wrote one time that kill, kill, annihilate. Is this the kind of elected person that you want? I mean, really, is this what we need? I don't think so. And I think Irwin was right. You know, this isn't a Democratic or a Republican issue. This is a sanity issue at this point. Find me reasonable people. Find me people who aren't playing nuts. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, the Lulus on the extreme right, they want nothing but trouble, Jake.
You're absolutely right. I guess my question is, how does someone like this exist in our political system, that he can actually threaten the public with killing them through exercising their constitutional rights and not be destroyed in the political sense? I'm sorry, this isn't a left-right issue. This is just a basic, fundamental constitutional right issue. How is this man allowed to flourish in our system? I don't know that it says a lot for the electorate in that state to allow a man like this to flourish. It just defies logic.
It is what it is. And you know, the more I look at this, the more I say, you know, at some point I'm hoping that rational thought comes back. And like Irwin said, in Pennsylvania, maybe we're a little luckier than other states. I'm not really sure that we have a split in the majority party between those who want good governance and those who are just completely off their rockers. That's something that, as you look down the road, is something that may save us.
I don't think Pennsylvania, I've lived all my life in Pennsylvania. Even when we had Republican administrations, even when they were Republican conservative, they were mainstream, and someone like this would not be allowed in public office in our state.
Anyway, if you want to contact us, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Again, we're having some phone troubles. When we come back, we're going to talk to Nick Bunker. He works on economic policy at the Center for American Progress. We're back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With the Congressional Super Committee deadline looming, their work appears to have broken down, with Republicans demanding deep cuts while not agreeing to raise any more revenue from wealthy Americans and corporations. The AFL-CIO is urging Democrats on that committee to stand firm against cutting billions of dollars in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. A solid majority of Americans oppose cuts to those programs and want the rich taxed more to help pay for them.
There is no reason on God's green earth that 15 million people can't be back to work this January if we made a decision as a nation that that was our top priority.
SEIU President Mary Kay Henry. Henry says Americans know in our bones that something is very wrong when many millions of people can't find jobs, while the richest 1% grow ever richer. Henry was arrested in a civil disobedience act recently at the Brooklyn Bridge, protesting the corporate domination of America and lack of any real agenda for the common good.
People believe that that level of sacrifice and dedication is required in this moment to get our elected officials and CEOs to understand that we need to get back to work in the millions, and that we are capable of a nation as making that happen.
The UAW puts its auto transplant factory organizing campaign into gear and heads straight for the dealers of the targeted automakers. Jesse Russell reports.
The United Auto Workers are preparing to bring an effort to organize foreign automakers right to the doorstep of dealers. Organizing U.S. plants for overseas automakers has been one of the primary goals of UAW President Bob King. The union hasn't publicly stated who their first target will be or when the campaign will start. However, at a recent meeting, union leadership stressed that the campaigns at the dealerships would not be pickets. Two of the main targets could be Toyota or Volkswagen. Both of those companies have seen large increases to their U.S. workforce over the last few years. When wages and benefits are calculated, Volkswagen employees make roughly half of the average earned by their counterparts at U.S. automakers.
The Teamsters have scored a big organizing win in Florida. A majority of the nearly 20,000 correctional, probation, and parole officers with the Florida Department of Corrections recently voted to join the Teamsters. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa, who recently won re-election for another term in office, welcomed the Florida Corrections officers to the 1.4 million member Teamsters Union. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
If you live here in Wisconsin, according to the governor, send out some thugs, gin up some trouble. You know, hey, sell off our power plants, kick all those working people off of Badger Basic, do some of the craziness that the governor here in Wisconsin wants to do, like stealing workers' rights away from them. I got to be honest, this is not the Badger way from the way the people that I've met here in Wisconsin. Anyway, to talk a little bit more about this in economic policy is Nick Bunker. He works on economic policy at the Center for American Progress, where he is a special assistant. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this situation here in Wisconsin and across, really going across the country. If it's not stopped here, it will certainly end up going across this country.
I agree, Rick. It's unfortunate that these attacks on workers are not just in Wisconsin. It's also, you've seen legislation some of this being froze in Ohio, Iowa, restricting collective bargaining rights for teachers, states like Florida, and then, of course, the right to work bill that they're trying to pass in Indiana, which caused those senators to leave the state.
I understand in Indiana, though, that the Republicans have agreed to withdraw that bill. But the Democrats have said, yeah, we want that and the voucher bill as well withdrawn because they're both toxic and they're both destructive to the working people of the state.
Yeah, exactly. And Mitch Daniels, the governor, the Republican governor of Indiana, has said that he wanted the Republicans to repeal the law to stop the debate on the law because he thought there were more important issues to deal on. So when you have a Republican governor saying something like that, you know something's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is there's probably bigger fish to fry, bigger paydays down the road. And why take on what's going on here in Madison if you're a governor in Indiana or Ohio or Pennsylvania, where we're from, or even New Jersey? Why ignite this kind of rage? And rage isn't even the right word for here. I don't know that these people here in Madison could have any rage because these are some of the nicest folks I've met. But this kind of an uprising, if you will, why get into that?
That's a good point. And unfortunately, it's not just the states where this is happening. You're also seeing at the federal level with the new Republican majority in the House, they're trying to pass a new continuing resolution to fund the government. But unfortunately, part of that bill is they're trying to cut $50 million from the National Labor Relations Board's budget. So according to the NLRB, that means they would have to furlough all their staff for about 55 days. So that means you had 55 days where workers wouldn't have essentially a court to go to if they had any complaints they wanted to file against their employers. So essentially Republicans, the bill that they've passed this last week and are trying to have become law, which shuts down the courts for workers.
Wow, that sounds like a great idea to me, because what I would say then is when they're out, when there's no NLRB to go to solve industrial disputes, I say every worker in the country go out on strike. We have general strikes across the country and chaos. Because it's my understanding, Nick, and you know maybe you've got some information different than me. You go back to when we passed the Labor Relations Act. That was to have industrial peace. That was to stop all of the strikes that went on by bringing people to the table. If we're no longer encouraging parties to go to the table and talk, let's have chaos.
Well, I don't know about that, but just to get back to your point about the going after public sector workers, it's interesting because the kind of line of attack that conservatives have been going after public sector workers is saying that they're overpaid, that we can't afford to pay these people these kind of wages and benefits. But if you actually look at it, that public sector workers aren't overpaid. There was a study done by the Economic Policy Institute here in Washington, D.C., and they found that if you compare public sector workers to similar workers, same skill level, same education in the private sector, public sector workers actually make less.
Yep.
So the evidence for what Republicans and conservatives are saying is even far less than you even looked at first glance.
Yeah, I was being facetious, Nick. I wasn't advocating for chaos. The idea here is that if you're going to defund the one thing that's supposed to and was passed solely to keep industrial peace, to keep labor and management talking to each other and making those decisions, if you're talking about doing away with that, what possibly could come of it? What good? Honestly, I do see that there would be a lot of major problems. And look, labor gave up a lot in the National Labor Relations Act. The right to strike in a lot of cases because you go to the board and you have these discussions. So it's amazing to me that the pro-business Republicans would want that avenue shut down to them. It's amazing to me.
And what's been more surprising is that was the less extreme of two options. There actually was an amendment to the continuing resolution that's sponsored by a Republican that would have completely defunded the NLRB and would have just totally wiped out the entire institution funding-wise for the rest of their fiscal year.
I mean, doesn't this really, when you look at all of the assaults on working people, it just goes to show the venom that the right has for working people.
That's true, and part of this is that working people and unions specifically are a important part of the political coalition that gets Democrats elected. So if you're a Republican and you're looking for ways to make sure that Democrats have a hard time getting elected, you go to where their main supporters are, and that's the unions and working people.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Nick. Here's the thing, Nick, and this is what I've been saying for years. There used to be labor-friendly Republicans. It wasn't until the Republican Party became so ideologically opposed to working people and so deeply in the pockets of corporate America and the big multinationals that working people started going, well, the only place we can go is the Democratic Party. Look, I would love to vote for a Republican because there are a lot of things I may agree with them on, but it's their stance on organizing, their stance on labor, that you just cannot possibly vote for them. And it's these insane stances, it's this kind of stuff that Scott Walker's doing that takes working class citizens of this country to look at them and go, why would I vote for a Republican?
It's a shame that you see Republicans going into tax. And pretty much just trying to, it's purely political. Any rationale they have that has to do with balancing budgets or any other kind of rationale, it's just a way to block out what they're really trying to do, and that's score political points.
Absolutely. What are you seeing in Washington? What kind of messaging are you getting? Because some of the messaging I'm getting about what's going on here in Madison, and not accurate. There's very little accurate reporting going on, in my opinion. To be honest, I haven't seen many national reporters here, but not accurate. They're worried that the thugs are going to take over. This is a place where they've set up a child care center and they've got lists for people to clean the Capitol and all of these things that are going on that, well, really democratic processes, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And while I have seen reports of supportive reports from Wisconsin here in D.C., that it depends on where you get your news from. But the message of what's going on in Wisconsin and what they're standing up for, I think, has not only reached Washington, but it's also reached the rest of the country. So hopefully that message gets out more and people realize what some politicians trying to do this country and put to Wisconsin and other states as examples of what we can do to stop those efforts.
Well, let's talk for a second. I got about 2 minutes left here. For a second, because a lot of people, the majority of people in the country are not members of a union. They don't understand. And I think this is a great opportunity to educate people. They don't understand why having unions benefits them. Have you guys done any research on how labor, maybe brings up the wage structure that helps working families? Have you done any work on something like that?
Well, there's been research done by us and several other research institutions that talk about how unions are good for working people, how there's unions, union workers have higher wages than non-union workers, how unions have been important in fighting, have been important players in fighting for important legislation like the federal minimum wage and healthcare reform, and they're as important political actors for middle-class policies for working families.
Like minimum wage and, like child labor laws and weekends and all of those things that unions brought us. But, we don't need them anymore. We don't need unions anymore because we've got all those things. Wonderful stuff. Anyway, Nick.
Yeah, and
Nick, I appreciate your time, buddy. You guys do great work over there at the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Ray.
All righty. Nick is a special assistant with economic policy over there. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around. We're here in Madison, Wisconsin.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This holiday season, how about having an Earth dinner? Not that you'd eat Earth, but that you and others would gather around the table to celebrate the bounty of our good green Earth. This is not just another meal, but a festive opportunity to have friends and family revel in the culture of food. Most of us don't realize that our dinner tells many stories, embodying our personal histories, family memories, music, art, and other connections besides our tummies. To help reawaken those cultural links in a way that can be tasty, touching, and fun, the folks at Organic Valley Family of Farms have come up with the novel idea of Earth Dinners. The concept simply involves throwing some sort of dinner party at which food is not merely consumed, but also is the focus of table talk, reminiscing, singing, laughing, game playing, and whatever else you can dream up. It can be a potluck dinner, a buffet, a five-course gourmet meal, a backyard barbecue, whatever suits you. The key is to know something about the food being served, where it came from, the history of some of its ingredients, songs written about it, and so on. The goal is to get everyone connecting in some personal or cultural way to the dinner as it progresses. Ask guests to tell about their very first food memory or to recall any family member who was a farmer or a jolly cook. Invite people of diverse backgrounds and all ages. Ask a farm family to join you, or a cheesemaker, or others involved in producing food. Then, eat, talk, enjoy. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help you get started, Organic Valley's website offers a sort of Earth Dinner Starter Kit. It includes tips on everything from menus to party favors, as well as providing reports on successful dinners that others have put together. Check it out at www.earthdinner.org. That's earthdinner.org. And have a good time.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Yes, they do here. They absolutely know, and it's a guy named Scott Walker and a whole bunch of Republicans, except the three. There are two. There's reports that the third Republican has come forward and said, you know what, we got to end this divisiveness. Let's get back to doing the business of the people. Let's get back to doing what we were sent here to do, which is create jobs and to make the economy work for everyone. A couple of quick mentions to our friends at the Montana AFL-CIO. Thanks for tuning in. Also, our good friend Frank Emspeck of Workers Independent News. He produces those great 3-minute news clips at the beginning of the hour. He's been doing that for the last 10 years. It was good to get him out of the office because he's given us some office space to do our program from. Good to see him get out of the office with the great people of OPEIU. So real good to see that happen, and a good union as well. I got an email during the break. Richard writes, the thing that blows my mind about teacher pay and benefit is this. You get what you pay for. If you ask virtually any normal parent, if they take $1 million for their kid, they would tell you that their kid isn't for sale at any price. But if you ask a Porsche owner where he takes his car for service, he'll probably say Pep Boys. Will he say Pep Boys? No, it's a Porsche. I take it to Auto House. So the reality here is, you know, you got parents who they won't take money for their kids. They want the best for their kids, and he points this out. So who do you want teaching your kids? Do you want some schmuck off the street? You know, like the Pep Boys analogy, the guy who, oh, yeah, I can find the part if they give me the right number. Or do you want somebody who really knows what they're doing? And you look at this report that I saw today. In states where collective bargaining is illegal, states like South Carolina, states like North Carolina, states like Georgia, states like Texas and Virginia, illegal. Their SAT, ACT scores, starting at number 50, working their way up, South Carolina, number 50, North Carolina, number 49, Georgia, number 48, Texas, number 47, and, oh, Virginia, a big jump up to number 44. Now, you come to a place like Wisconsin, collective bargaining for their teachers, number 2 in the country. Do you think that's by accident? Because I don't. You get what you pay for. And if you pay decent teachers, professional teachers, like the guy we met, that Mitchell Ost, I believe his name was, who told the story, look, man, this is the job I've always wanted. In this community, in this school district, went to the school here, wanted to be in this community, spent his entire life up to this point working for this job at a wage that he could support his family. He's like, if you take that away, I got to move.
Just last night, after the show, we usually go back to our hotel room, and I know I like to watch the Ed show. He actually came to this town, interviewed one of the teachers who's been teaching for about 20 years, just like you said, just a terrific person, family person, mother of a couple kids, loves her job, been teaching for 20 years, and she said, if they don't have collective bargaining, she said, that's going to provide a real hardship, and I might have to get out. And those are the kind of impacts on the system. I mean, if why would we want to cut back in education when we don't have to? Just defies logic. We are preparing the future leaders of this nation, and you want to gut them? It makes no sense at all.
Well, it makes sense if, you know, as George Carlin says, you want people smart enough to push the buttons but not smart enough to ask why. It makes perfect sense. You want people that are easily manipulated. You want people who are not critical thinkers. I mean, anybody who would support this guy in this effort, especially these T-twits, you know, come on. This is exactly the stuff that they were railing about in November. An overreaching, overpowerful, overarching government who's tyrannical. And they're using the power of the fist to come down upon us. This is what this is, man. This is stealing somebody's rights.
Doesn't it appear, though, Rick, and I think to me, this is just my take. More and more I see of the Tea Party people, it seems that their movement has been taken over by the anti-government segment, the anti-government faction. Because some of them, when they originally came out, they were... You and I actually agree with them on some things, but you don't see that expressed in their movement anymore. You certainly don't see any elected officials that have come from the Tea Party movement.
Yeah, it's just amazing, amazing stuff. And, you know, at a certain point, I think people are waking up. I think people are seeing what this really is about. It's about political power. It's about going after it's about going after your political enemy and really... Really squeezing them to death.
You mentioned something about right here, where this is very, really critical. What our listeners have to understand, the labor movement is looking for that third Republican to back off. And if they can do that, they can deny the governor his votes to get it passed in the Senate. When I left the rally tonight, there were people taking signatures. What for? To sign up if they have to follow through in a recall.
I looked at
the law. It's not that tough in this state. It goes on. It goes by a certain percentage, which is mandated by the Constitution, on what showed up the prior election. Then, if it gets on the ballot, it's by a majority. So it can be done. And make no mistake, the enemies of labor are watching this, and they're watching it closely.
Well, this is that PATCO moment, and labor has responded, and you got to give them credit. But at the end of this, it comes down to some very interesting, really some other interesting themes, like that of a contract. You know, the idea of contract enforcement. If we no longer have to accept workers' contracts, do we have to accept CEO contracts? If we no longer have to honor the contract between the state and its workforce, do I have to honor my contract between my house and my bank? At some point, how does that work? And Fire Dog Lake had an interesting bit of numbers in that they were looking at the total liabilities of the Wisconsin Pension Fund. One of the things that Walker is saying is going to bring down the state, and the Republicans are saying, well, you know, all these generous pensions and all of these liabilities, they're going to kill us. Wisconsin, amazingly... in their numbers, in a study in 2008 by Pew, showed that the total liabilities for the Wisconsin Pension Fund was about $77 million, a little over $77 million. The total unfunded liability was about $252,000, which means that Wisconsin's pension fund is 99.67% funded. They really do not have a funding problem. Evidently, they've been doing the right thing, but you've got a governor who's an opportunist. And what they did over at Fire Dog Lake, and they said, well, if we have to take these teachers' pensions away, if we have to take away these contractual obligations, let's take a look at the CEOs of the big banks that we gave TARP money to. And you go down the list, Bank of America took $45 billion. They handed out $3.3 billion of that in bonuses to their CEOs. New York Mellon Bank, they took $3 billion, handed out almost $1 billion in gifts to their CEO. Citibank took $45 billion, handed out $5.3 billion to their CEOs. And at the end of the top 10, all the way down the list, we gave those banks $175 billion. Here, have a gift. They handed out almost $33 billion of that to their CEOs and to their top people. They must not have been in really that bad a shape if you think about it. When we gave all that money and they handed out, yeah, here you go. Because we need to make sure that our best and brightest are well funded. We need to make sure that the bonuses for the CEOs in Wall Street and in the auto dealers and all these places, the CEOs, we need to be able to give them all this money because we might not be able to attract qualified people. Oh, we might not be able to attract qualified people. What about the teachers who are teaching the next generation what most family values people want to say is our most precious asset? We want some minimum wage schmuck teaching our kids, but you know, hey, to run our big companies, we need the best and the brightest. We need to hand out billions of dollars, but we're going to begrudge a teacher of a reasonable health care plan, of some security in old age, and oh, I don't know, maybe a little bit of income so that they can buy their own apples and occasionally a pear for lunch instead of depending on the students to bring it in. Doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me, but that's what they want. They want to steal those away from the working class. And you listen to Republicans, Jake, who are talking about letting cities go bankrupt.
Yep.
This idea is theft. It's pure and simple what it is. It's theft. And not only theft, it's burdening the taxpayers. Because eventually all of those pension liabilities end up where? On the backs of the taxpayers. Because there will be a riot in this country if you take every municipal employee, every state, local government person, you steal their pensions. They will end up on the back of the PBGC, which is who? You and me.
And what the average person doesn't understand, when cities go bankrupt, you're basically blackmailing them into go to the source of where they can get their hands on some money to survive, and that ultimately means a lot of times it means privatizing services or selling off assets, which, by the way, were bought by the very taxpayers who are then going to be screwed. And that's what we face all over the country.
Yeah, but you come back to this, and it's amazing stuff. And remember, the Republicans, they said they were going to create jobs. They said, man, we know how to create the jobs. We're going to get government out of the way and let the job creators go. But what have they done since taking over? What have they actually done to create any jobs? Everything I see them doing is aiming at destroying jobs, tearing down the living standards of the workers in this country, not just public sector, but private sector as well, stealing your rights and taking away your ability to support your family. That is the Republican Party mantra. Why? They can put more money in people's pockets like the Koch brothers, so they can fill up the Walmart coffers, so that they can pander to their billionaire class campaign donors. That's what this is about. I wish it were about something more lofty. I wish it were something better. But at the end of the day, it's about money, and it's about power. And that's the end of that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Fred Clark, a state representative here in Wisconsin, one of the guys who has come out in front of the job-destroying budget repair bill that our boy here, Scott Walker, has proposed. Again, not thinking. every piece of legislation has consequences. This one has some consequences as well. And when we come back, Fred Clark's going to talk about that, among other things. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Remember back in November, the Republicans ran on this idea that they knew how to create jobs. They were going to unleash the job creation in the country. Yet all I see, divisiveness, all I see is lack of vision, lack of leadership, and things that they do take leadership on actually are going to cost us jobs. And I look at this press release that I got from State Representative Fred Clark here in Wisconsin talking about the forest industry. Amazing stuff. That's why I've got State Representative Fred Clark here on the program. Representative, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, in November, they ran on this jobs platform, yet I'm looking at this budget repair bill, and it looks like your governor's going to kill thousands of jobs.
Well, unfortunately, that does appear to be the case. We're right in session as we speak. The moment we're debating the issue of federal transit funding that comes to the states to help support bus and taxi and municipal transit systems. And guess what? That funding comes with some strings attached, one of which is to assure the rights of workers in the systems to collectively bargain. If we pass this bill in Wisconsin to eliminate collective bargaining rights for employees, we're going to threaten millions of dollars worth of federal funding just for transit aid alone. So, yeah, unfortunately, ideology is trumping good business practices, and it's trumping our ability to actually attract people and jobs to Wisconsin. That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. You know, what's interesting is you have a governor much like the guy in Ohio and in Florida who evidently doesn't want to have public transportation, doesn't want to have 21st century infrastructure. In fact, a guy from Milwaukee emailed me during the program last night and said, you know, I'd love to come up to Madison, but I don't have a car. And if it were the 1950s, I could have taken a train into town. But thanks to this governor, I can't get there.
Nope, and unfortunately, thanks to this governor, we won't see a train service in this state for another 25 years, probably.
Just a lost opportunity for the people of Wisconsin. Representative Clark, I want to talk a little bit about your press release. You're saying thousands of private sector jobs threatened by the loss of collective bargaining. You're talking about your forest industry, the paper and all that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, I can. You know, Wisconsin is the number one paper-making state in the country. We print the paper that goes into Time Magazine and Newsweek and many of the other national market magazines that consumers and readers buy all over the country. We have a strong niche for that market, and a big part of that niche is what's called certification of sustainable forestry. We grow the trees here in Wisconsin on 16 million acres of forest land, and many of the companies that produce that paper are certified because they adhere to the best practices for sustainable management. The long list of things they need to do to prove themselves sustainable, one of them is to assure the rights of workers to collectively organize. And unfortunately, passage of this legislation will put that certification status in jeopardy.
And could jeopardize almost a $21 billion industry.
That's correct. This is one of Wisconsin's strongest industries, the pulp and paper and forest products industry. It employs 300,000 people in this state. We don't have definitive answers right now as to the full effect of this, but that's part of the problem here, is that when we're moving legislation as fast as we are, it's simply impossible to understand and evaluate all of the consequences, unintended or not.
You know, Representative Clark, we've walked around, we've talked to hundreds of people of the tens of thousands that have been here in Madison, and they all come back to the same thing. This is not the Republican Party that we knew. These aren't our neighbors. These aren't the ideals that we wanted to pursue. And a lot of them are asking, what happened? So I guess I got to ask you, is this business as usual in Wisconsin, or is this part of a national strategy that we're seeing played out in places like Ohio and Indiana and possibly in our state in Pennsylvania?
You know, Rick, this is clearly not business as usual. This is not the conservative tradition that conservatives around this state have believed in and understood. You know, quite honestly, we are, unfortunately, what we're seeing proposed here is part of a national agenda to eliminate the power of public employee unions. And that's just one small part of a strategy to limit the scope of government. And as we see this play out, we are, quite honestly, this is a game changer. The 100,000 plus people who have been in this Capitol over the last 10 days opposed to this legislation are telling us, quite honestly, this is not what they signed up for. This has nothing to do with the mandate that voters may have given on November 2nd. Nobody was buying the idea, and nobody campaigned on the idea of eliminating the rights of workers to organize in the workplace.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. To me, November was about an anger that there weren't enough jobs being created, that unemployment was still high. I really don't think we wanted to get into a whole bunch of really extreme ideas. We just wanted some movement on jobs. And what I'm seeing here, especially from your governor here in Wisconsin, is this really working to destroy jobs and make things worse.
Well, unfortunately, that seems to be the case. Apparently, we want jobs in the state, but only if they're low-paying jobs for large corporations. We don't seem to be very interested in jobs for small and medium-sized businesses, though we don't seem to be very interested in protecting decent middle-class jobs in the public sector. And come on, that's a huge part of the employment base, especially in small towns in this state.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Fred Clark, here from Madison, Wisconsin. Representative, during the November elections, we kept hearing this phrase over and over again. We're going to run government like business. And as we've seen the last 30 years, business has been assaulting their workers, stealing their rights. I guess that's what we're seeing. They're living up to a campaign pledge. They are going to try and run government like a business and more like a feudal government, if you will.
Well, I have to tell you, Rick, to hear the public be convinced as a result of right-wing radio talk show hosts and huge amounts of spending by some very wealthy special interests who are leading members of the public to believe that public employees are the problem, that the cops and the firefighters and the snowplow drivers and the healthcare workers that work for state and local governments and the school teachers, that they're really the problem here and they're the reason why we have a fiscal deficit. Quite honestly, nothing could be further from the truth. And so we're here today to protect our greatest asset, which is our public employees, make sure they maintain those rights, because quite honestly, the standards that we set in the state for employment, that's a benchmark that other private companies have to try to meet.
Absolutely.
And that's raising the bar for everybody.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've been most amazed about walking through the streets here in Madison is the overwhelming support of actual small businesses. I'm not talking about Halliburton or the big law firms or the big Wall Street traders. I'm talking about local people, local businesses, and really just the amazing support that I've seen from them.
It's exactly right, and I've been overwhelmed by support from people who aren't—they're not part of organized labor, they're not public employees. But you know what? They know public employees, and they understand the value they provide in our communities. And we have had business owners, private individuals, retirees, school children, high schoolers—you name it—down here to stand up for what they understand is a really important battle for the rights of workers.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the nicest protest, the nicest people I think I've ever met. This really just an amazing event. As I said last night on the program, a family event. The number of people who are sleeping in the Capitol with their children just really, really, really grabbed me.
Rick, it's astounding. I was walking through the halls last night at in the middle of the night as we're in session here. There are hundreds of people camped out in every hallway, and you're absolutely right. This has been a completely peaceful display of civic mindedness on the part of citizens from all over the state.
Yeah, I actually saw college kids on the floor, on their hands and knees, washing the floor. I was going to take video and send it back to their parents to see if they cleaned their house like they were cleaning the people's house. Amazing.
Oh, it is amazing. And whenever this group leaves here, they will leave this building like they found it. And with a crowd bigger than a football stadium coming through here, that's really something to say.
Now, last bit of questioning I have for you. All night long, you guys have been in session. Planned on going for, I'm not sure, probably into tonight as well. What's being done as we speak?
We're introducing amendments. Quite honestly, our commitment is to kill this bill.
Right.
But short of that, we are going to continue to introduce amendments to address every weakness, every unintended consequence, every terrible proposal that's embedded in this piece of legislation. And we are going to, that's our job right now, is to basically do the work of trying to correct all the deficiencies in this proposal, and we will do that as long as it takes.
Hopefully we stop this insanity right here in Wisconsin so that we don't have to do it in Pennsylvania or other states across the country. Last word for you. What do you say to the representatives and the people of Pennsylvania who may end up having to do what you folks are doing here in Madison?
Rick, I appreciate the question. My suggestion is don't go down that road. As our former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold said, you poke a badger in the eye and you find out what you get. I don't think our governor or the small number of people who really were pushing this agenda had any idea the outpouring, the reaction they were going to elicit from the people of Wisconsin. So I think that every other state governor is on notice now that if you mess with collective bargaining rights, you are playing with fire. And we hope that the battle we're having here is a signal to everybody else in this country.
Yep, so no my way or the highway, as your governor has said for the people of Wisconsin. Good for you. Representative Clark, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight. We are all watching and hoping and cheering for you.
Thanks, Rick. Take care, and I'll be good.
No matter to me.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
My name is Precious, and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times, but without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the way it is. Everything's raisin, but the way it is. Gasoline, groceries, and our haters. Everything's raisin, but the way it is. Everything's raisin, but the way it is.
Well, you know, that's the truth. You know, every time you turn around, they want to steal something else from us. You look at the last 30 years, wage stagnation. Look at the last 30 years, destruction of the working class. You look at the destruction of the standard of living of those of us who find ourselves in the middle. And I think Chris Christie is right, the governor of New Jersey. I think he's right. There is a force working to destroy the middle class in this country, and it's not the unions. That's the meme that he keeps throwing out. Well, these unions want to destroy the middle class. No. It's not the unions who are going after people's wages. It's not the unions who are going after their standard of living. It's you. It's the politician who panders to big business. And that goes across the spectrum. It's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. It's all of them. You look at our insane trade agreements. That wasn't a Republican or a Democratic idea. It was both of them. They both did it. And at the end of the day, folks, I'm really hoping out of this comes a new level of commitment to each other, for one, and an awakening to who's on our side. The right knows who's on their side. When Scott Nutwalker knows who his boys are. Scott Walker knows who's behind him. The Koch brothers picked up the phone. What if you called the local governor and said, hey, this is Joe Schmo? He'd go, oh, yeah, click. But when he said, oh, this is David Koch, you know, the guy who's giving you $43,000 for your campaign gave $1 million to the gubernatorial, the governor's association, gonna spend $320,000 on attack ads. You pick up that phone and you have that conversation. And what's interesting, you know, you go back to this, Jake, you go back to this conversation. What grabbed me as the ease that Walker had talking to him, the ease of which his plans flowed off his tongue, the openness, the honesty. Think of that. Honesty from a politician. That's what you got. Why? Because he thought, unlike Mr. Cullen, who isn't one of them, he thought he was talking to one of his own.
Is it any wonder that people have less and less confidence in government? Look at what this man's doing. He's selling the people's government. It is open for sale.
For the highest bidder.
To me, it's one of just a horrendous form of corruption that what is happening here. And people see that, and it just sickens them. A process that is designed to take care of the state and to take care of its people is being turned into an option.
And, you know, to be honest, if it were going to the highest bidder, I don't think I'd be upset. The problem is $43,000 is not a lot of money. I mean, to you and me, it's a lot of money. But in the big grand scheme of things, when you're talking about, you know, a budget, I think, what's their budget? Somewhere around $15 billion a year. When you're talking about a $15 billion budget and all of the money that the state spends and the pension funds and all of this stuff, the really big numbers, giving somebody $43,000 so that you could pick him up and have him on the phone and have him tell you all of his plans, $43,000 is not a lot of money.
Well, I think this governor has stars in his eyes. I think perhaps he's way ahead of the game, and I think, you know, our friend, the lawyer from Pennsylvania, described it exactly right. You know, if he wants to play in the big leagues, he better learn how to play the game, because, you know, he made a major mistake here. But, let's be honest. If you're going to attach yourself to somebody with money, you could do a lot worse than the Koch brothers. They got a lot of money there.
Yeah. Stephanie emails me, and again, if you want to contact us, we would love to take calls, but right now having the phone difficulties, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, and we encourage people to contact us via email anyway. Tell us what you think, your thoughts, ideas, whatever we're talking about. We'd love to hear you weigh in on it. Again, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or just go to thericksmithshow.com, click on contact. Stephanie writes, my good friend is a police officer out of Milwaukee. He was ordered to Madison to help provide security at the Capitol building. He said to me before he left on Sunday that he lauds all of us trying to take on Walker. He also said that, quote, his more intelligent coworkers are all behind labor despite being excluded from Walker's proposal. And don't think for a second that he didn't take out the cops and the firemen for a reason. That's the divide and conquer part of this. The cops and the firemen were next. They knew they were in the shark tank. They knew they were next, which is why, to their credit, they came and they stepped forward and joined, and really in a marvelous fashion. Today we marched down the street with the firemen, with the bagpipes, and it was really, you know, people stopped their cars, beeping the horn. Small business owners came out of their businesses, locked their doors, and joined these firemen walking down the street. It was just an amazing sight. And to see how much people love these firemen and how they have really taken this over a little bit.
I mean, some of the things that have happened, I mean, seriously, you almost have to pinch yourself. Some of the things that you and I have seen, Rick, in the last 3 or 4 days, to a large degree, it'll probably be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm sure there'll be some movies made about what's happening here this week.
No, the only way there'll be movies made out of here is if Walker does what he wants to do. And that's come down with a strong arm and kick those people out of his capital. That's the only way this gets into the movie theaters. It's the only way that this becomes the major history. Now, this is history. These are finally people who are coming together to make their lives better instead of the T-Twizzlers who are trying to tear things down. There's a huge difference here. And it's becoming more apparent every day because these protests this weekend are supposed to be huge. Tomorrow is supposed to be a huge day with the police and the firemen who are coming out to have their rally. Saturday, I hear, is supposed to be massive. And it's the reason we're here.
You know, you can make a movie and be honest. You could say this is about how labor saved our democracy, and in many ways, that is exactly the battle going on here.
And I agree, but here's the thing. Nobody wants to watch a whole bunch of nice people doing nice things, walking around with trays of hot dogs going, here, have one.
Can you imagine, Rick, now you're from Cleveland.
Look, hold on one second. There are no vendors selling anything on the streets. No T-shirts, no sodas, no water, none of that. You know what they're doing? They're going, oh, you thirsty? Have some water. Well, how much would you like? Remember yesterday? We were walking through the Capitol, and there was a woman standing there with a bucket, and I threw a dollar into her bucket because I thought she was collecting money. No, she was giving out cough drops because she was concerned for the people.
That's right. I remember that.
She was concerned for the people there. This is the kind of protest we're at, a protest where people care about each other. And I got to tell you, that speaks volumes for this community. I wish that we had this in Harrisburg. I wish that we had this in Carlisle and in Shippensburg and in Mechanicsburg and all across the listening area. I do. I wish we had this kind of amazing, amazing togetherness. Because that's what it's been, man. And she was like, I mean, I threw the dollar in her because I wasn't thinking. I saw somebody with a look like a collection bucket. They haven't been taking up money for food or something.
And she actually almost chased you.
She did.
To give you the dollar back. And then on down the road, we met the IBEW guys who were handing out hot dogs, and they were good. Yep. They weren't just cooked dogs, you know. They were actually good.
They were bratwurst.
My point is, not that I'm demeaning your city, but, you know, cities like Philadelphia and cities like Cleveland are union towns.
Yep.
And I'm not so sure when some of those agitators came in if they would have been, you know, nobody's going to, you know, welcome them with open arms. You know, when you come in there and go into these union towns and try to take their rights away from you, you better be ready for a fight in more than one way. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Amazing stuff here. And a woman bumped into me. I've told this story. She was just, oh, my, I'm so sorry. Oh, my, I'm so sorry. You know, just you know, beyond herself. And I'm like, you know, I'm like four times as big as you are. You can't possibly hurt me. And then I thought, well, let me check my wallet because that's my thought process. It was still there.
Yeah.
But, you know, where I grew up, somebody bumps into you, check your wallet here. You know, it's a whole different
environment. And in that mass of people where everybody's touching each other, I mean, to get around, you have to, and people are excusing themselves all over the place. It has just been an amazing, amazing experience.
Well, the T-Twizzlers cannot be happy. On Tuesday, a federal judge in D.C. dismissed another lawsuit filed against Obamacare. The lawsuit filed by an organization funded by the insane evangelical figure Pat Robertson argued that the law's mandate to purchase insurance was unconstitutional since it violated the plaintiff's religious freedom to reject medical services and, by extension, insurance. Somehow, I guess you can, I don't know. Anyway, in her 64-page ruling, Judge Gladys Kessler argued that Congress's authority to mandate the purchase of health insurance was constitutional since refusing insurance could be considered an active choice. She wrote in her piece, "It is pure semantics to argue that an individual who makes a choice to forego health insurance is not acting, especially given the serious economic and health-related consequences to every individual of that choice." She goes on to say, "Making a choice is an affirmative action, whether one decides to do something or not to do something. There are two sides of the same coin. To pretend otherwise is to ignore reality." Kessler is now the third to rule health care reform constitutional. Now you have the other two who have ruled it unconstitutional. And as we've been saying for the longest time, we know where this is eventually going to end up. It's going to end up in the Supreme Court. And you know, let's see where the big money donors have put their money in building a conservative Supreme Court. How corporate are our justices? And what does corporate America think? You know, are they going to be able to benefit and profit from this? And that's what it's going to come down to, I think. I have very little faith in the Supreme Court to do what is legally the right thing. I do have faith in them to do what is economically in the best interests of the multinational corporations and the big donors. I do believe that. So it'll be interesting to see how this decision comes down. Again, I do believe it will be a 5-4 decision with one of the conservative justices, probably Scalia, jumping over to the other side. We know Thomas is, he's going to be a no vote. Doesn't matter. It's unconstitutional to Thomas. We know that. So it'll be interesting to see how the other ones play this out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Teamsters President Jimmy Hoffa, who was here in Madison today. We're right back after this.
I've never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
There's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember to check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we've been all week, bringing you the every blow from the front lines of the class war. Today, another amazing day of speeches. A lot of people coming out, having their voices heard. Today, the Teamsters had their big trucks out there. A lot of members, a lot of energy. And their president, James Hoffa, came out and he riled the crowd. I got President Hoffa on the line. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, great to be here.
You know, you look at the crowd today. Several thousand people came out to greet you. I'm just curious your gut reaction to what happened today.
Well, you know, this is ground zero in this battle, and I'm telling you today, you know, I brought the solidarity of 1.4 million Teamsters, you know, to these public employees that are under attack here in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm telling you, it was exciting. We had a message for them, and the people just tore the place apart, you know, just yelling and being excited, because that's what it's going to take to show that people aren't backing down. This is an anti-union governor here. He's trying to take away their collective bargaining. And the biggest thing is he says there's this gap in the budget. They said, well, okay, we'll cut our wages and we'll cut our fringe benefits to meet that, but save our collective bargaining. And he said no. So it's not about the budget. It's about ideology. It's about being anti-union. But it was a great rally, and we had hundreds of Teamsters show up. There were hundreds of firefighters. So everybody's coming and making this the cause. The cause, because what's going on here affects everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, in labor, when we talk about, you know, somebody going after somebody in labor, we say an injury to one is an injury to all. And, you know, first it's the public employees, in Wisconsin, and tomorrow it's right to work or take unions down across the country. So we're fighting back. It was a great day, and I'm just so proud to be here and so excited. It was one of the greatest rallies I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, the reason we came from Pennsylvania here to Madison, Wisconsin, is because I do believe, as Scott Walker said in his now infamous tape with, you know, this bizarre phone call he thought he was having with the Koch brother, this is the first domino. Wisconsin will be that first domino, and this is going to sweep across the country to Ohio and eventually back home to Pennsylvania. So right here is where this has to be stopped.
Well, I think that's right. And these other governors, these other right-wing governors are watching this in Indiana, Ohio, Missouri. Not Missouri, but Missouri's got a legislature. They got a Democratic governor. But they're all watching to see what happens here. That's why what happens here is a key. Because if we back them down here, we'll back them down everywhere. And what I'm so excited about is all of labor is here. And you can imagine how these public employees feel when they see unions from all over the country coming here. We've got people here from California, from Chicago. They've driven in from everywhere to be part of this. That's what this is all about. They've got firefighters here from the entire state. There were hundreds of them. And they all got up and they rallied. And that's what it's... That's what it's so it's good to be here.
Well, it's about solidarity. You know, as a friend says, solidarity is not just a word, it's an action. And we're seeing solidarity in action here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And they're going to be doing a tremendous rally here, and we're going to make sure the Teamsters are here. I'm looking at, you know, going to Ohio, where the battle goes on. I'm talking to our brothers there. The battle goes on in Indiana. There's battles going on everywhere because they think it's the time to take on labor. And you know what? The only way that, the only thing they understand is we fight back, we save our dignity. And that's what this is all about. Yep. We're talking about nurses here. We're talking about, you know, people have gone to college and are making $50,000 a year and they want to attack those people. They want to rewrite history as to who caused the crash and why these states are in trouble, why the banks are failing, why there's foreclosures. Well, Wall Street did that, not some nurse. That's what Wall Street did to us, and now we're all paying for it.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because the mean across this country somehow is that asking for better wages, hours, and conditions, that's somehow socialism, but being forced to clean up the mess that Wall Street created, somehow that's patriotic.
Well, they're rewriting history. They're basically getting people to start thinking that it's because of some teacher that taught for 30 years that there's something wrong with her, that she shouldn't get a pension. And they're rewriting history as to who caused the bank failures, who caused the crash that took $11 trillion out of our economy, you know, who caused, you know, all of our houses to go down and over 200 banks to fail. That's all Wall Street. We all know it. We lived it. This is not a long time ago. It's 08 and 09.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
You were here. I was here. We know what the truth is.
Absolutely.
So let's not try and blame working people that all they want is a decent shape. They want to have a middle-class existence. They want to be able to, you know, teach or take care of kids or be an EMS driver. And when it's all over, they want to have health care. They want to have a decent pension. That's the American way, and we're going to fight for that.
You know, in this phone call that Scott Walker had with whom he believed to be David Koch, he pretty much laid out the fact that this is a national plan to basically repeal the entire 20th century, to go back to the good old days of the 1890s where the robber barons controlled all of the wealth and the working people were basically peasants scurrying for crumbs.
That's exactly right. They want to basically roll the clock back. Like you said, 1890 is exactly what they want, and they want all of us to be servants and slaves. And they have all the money. And that's what this is about. It's about money. It's about them keeping more. You don't see anybody talking about, let's raise the taxes on the rich people, do you?
Absolutely not.
And you don't see anybody talking about the corporations and these guys that make $60 million a year, these CEOs, with their bonuses, the Wall Street guys with $60 or $100 million, why shouldn't they pay more? Why should you go after some poor nurse or some poor teacher that worked all of her life, you know, that makes $50,000 and lives in a clapboard house? Why, we're going to go after her while the other people don't pay? It's un-American. It's not right. And we've got to make sure it doesn't happen.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with President James Hoffa of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, my union. I was a Teamster for 21 years, and 21 of the great years. And I tell this story often, President Hoffa. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And it was because of my membership in the Teamsters Union, my membership, that I was able to do much better, go to college, move into a neighborhood where now doctors and lawyers live. My children aren't going to see that poverty. And this is a message that that hasn't been told often enough. But I think this here in Madison, Wisconsin, this is going to open up an entirely new generation to labor and to organizing.
Rick, you're right. You know what? What's exciting here, people are bringing their kids here. They're bringing, you know, kids that, you know, that are 5 years old or teenagers. And when somebody asks them what's a union, they know what a union is. And you're seeing retirees here. And they're telling me, you know, they come up and say, I'm a retiree, but you know what? The union was good to me, and I want to make sure other people have what I have. That's what this is about. It's not only the active members who are great, but also the young people that are coming out. And people want to bring their kids to see this because they know this is history.
So
we're fighting at a time, you know, somebody said this is a time that we're fighting for the American dream, and they're trying to take away the dream, and we're not going to let them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in his conversation with who he thought was David Koch, the issue of Patco came up. And Walker's opinion was that Patco, the firing of those workers, showed the Soviet Union that Reagan wasn't a pushover, that he was willing to kick his own people into the street and really go after his own people. So in Walker's mind, I do believe that he seems to think that he's going to show the radical right that he's willing to take on working people. Doesn't make much sense to me, sir.
I think that's exactly right. I think this guy... He is a stooge of the Koch brothers. You know, they were the largest participant, you know, contributor in his campaign. He's got that Americans for Prosperity, which is another front organization for the Koch operation. They are the ones that underwrote the entire Tea Party operation. And so this whole thing is a charade. This is basically big business creating. It's like the John Birch Society going back to 1964. And they have created this to cause turmoil, to make things flip over, and to basically, like you said, roll the clock back to 1890 and take away everything we have. But the one thing you notice, no one says that the rich pay more taxes. You don't hear that anywhere in their rhetoric.
Nope.
It's all about the working people. It's not about the rich people. It's not about the big corporations with $2 trillion. It's not about the CEOs. It's not about the hedge fund guys. They're not paying their fair share. If there's a problem, let's all pay. Let's make sure we fix it together.
I got two more questions for you. The media, I got to be honest, the media coverage in this this entire thing, in my opinion, has been lacking. The corporate-controlled for-profit media has allowed this story, in my opinion, to go pretty much untold. And when they do talk about it, it's only about those greedy teachers or those greedy state workers who want all these Cadillac health care benefits and these enormously generous pensions. Even though that's not the real case, that's the story they keep peddling.
Well, I credit Ed Schultz. He was the first guy to get this story on the air. And the big networks, NBC, CBS, didn't even come here until he started putting it on the air. And that's what's so important, that we put a focus on it, get the national media in here, for them to see him interview these teachers and the EMS drivers and the nurses and look in their eyes. These are Americans. These are people that have gone to school, that care about their jobs, that are dedicated to their careers. And you see, those are the people. No one can call those people greedy. Those are the people that work every day that make our country great. But you're right. The media has ignored this, and just now they're finally coming up to realize what a great story this is. And this is the story of the day. This is ground zero on our battle for the working middle class.
Along the same lines of that question, doesn't this go to show that we have media consolidated in this country to such a point that if a couple of people decide it doesn't get told, it doesn't get told?
Well, the media is just basically monkey see, monkey do. I mean, you have the regular media, then you got Fox, which is, you know, just a bunch of lunatics. But when you basically get the regular media, you know, they're focused on the sexy thing of Libya and Egypt, and they don't care about what's going on here at home. And what's going on here is just as big a story as what's going on overseas. And they have really neglected it, and they haven't really interviewed, you know, the nurses and the EMS and the teachers. That's the story here, and I wish they would do more, and that's why I think it's important we do all the media we can so that every American knows what's going on here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Last question. What do you say to the people back home in Pennsylvania? Because I do believe this is coming to our area. It's going to come to Harrisburg. We will be there to fight, but what do you say to the folks in our area?
Well, here, you know, Pennsylvania is a great union, state. And, you know, we lost the Senate race, we lost the governor's race. And I got news for you. This guy is a guarantee. He's talking to Scott Walker. He's watching what's happening here. And they got the same ideas in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania has always been a bulwark for good unions. And we've got to make sure it doesn't happen there. So the same energy we have here, the same organization of people taking over the Capitol in Harrisburg, we're going to have to do it in Pennsylvania, but we're not going to lose. And that's what's going to take. So every state, we're doing it in Indiana, we're doing it in Ohio, and if it spills over into Pennsylvania, I'll be there, the Teamsters will be there, all of organized labor will be there.
And all of our good friends at Teamsters Local 776 will most certainly be there. Sir, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after this. You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again. Because God is a Republican.
You know, that's what they'd want us to believe, that the right to destroy workers' rights, it came from an edict from above. The Holy One sent it down on a tablet, scrolled on a tablet, stealing health care from people, stealing their pensions, not providing health care. You know, you go back to all of the, you know, I guess it was my upbringing in the hippie liberal Catholic Church. That kind of put me in a direction of peace and social justice, that maybe we were supposed to take care of each other. Kind of like what they're doing here in Madison. I mean, I'm just amazed. There's a restaurant here that Ian's Pizza, now world famous. They've handed out thousands of slices of pizza. Here, take it. We were walking in the Capitol the other day, a guy with a pizza box going, here, feed everybody. The guy with the hot dogs today, just amazing stuff today, Jake. Amazing, amazing stuff. Anyway, during the break, I got an email from Steven, who asked, please add a second camera as an insert to your show for your assistant host producer. I would like to see him versus the headless speaker, evidently. Since we've been on remote, we're dealing with some interesting situations. But he goes on to tell a good story, and we have moved the camera over so that, Stephen, you can see Jake there in the camera. Hope it doesn't break your screen. But he goes on to tell a very good story about his life. And these are the kind of stories that more often have to get out. The fact that for a time he served as a labor organization president for the California Law Enforcement as a California law enforcement officer. You know, he talks about his work with Teamsters in a public works department and how they were great people. These are the kind of words that have to get out. These are the kind of stories that people have to tell. And for too long, none of this stuff ever got out. And I think when they look back in 5 or 10 or 20 years and they look back at this moment, when they awakened the working class, when they brought people back together, they're going to rue the day that Scott Walker said he was going to call out the National Guard. They're going to rue this overreach. Because you're already seeing governors across the country kind of going, well, we don't want that here. We don't want that. We don't want to wake up our people. No, we were happy having them dumb and walking through the streets thinking everything was great. And we would just pick a little bit, pick a little bit. This was taking the whole pie, man. This was, we want it all and we want it now. Instead of, you know, by piecemeal, Jay.
You know, all too often, and I've noticed this over the years, labor does not toot their own horn enough. We do not tell our complete story, and that is, look, we're not greedy. We're not out here trying to destroy any companies, destroy governments, be it federal or state. We're just trying to get our fair share of the economic pie, be that public or private dollars. Not only that, many of the people that we represent do vital jobs that contribute mightily to society and the betterment for all of our citizens in this country. Unfortunately, I think we haven't tooted our horn enough. We've allowed our enemies to portray us in a light that isn't true, and all too often, unions and the members that they represent have a negative connotation in the eyes of many because we've allowed our enemies to basically outsmart us in that area. And that's been one of the faults. I have to be critical of labor. And I understand some of it's money, Rick, but I think some of it was that we were just happy to represent our members.
Well, no, he's not happy. You were busy representing their members because you've got to take care of your folks. And not, you know, these are labor people. These are people who take care of problems. These aren't people who go out and do messaging. The right, they've got all the money in the world. But the consequence of 30 years of really attack on working people have culminated in stagnant wages, disappearing benefits, health and pension funds that are in trouble. And since we've been staying in the hotel here in Madison, and we've had a great time here, we've been getting the USA Today paper, which generally I'm not a big fan of. But the last couple of days, man, they have really had some great stories. And to bring it home to what we're talking about, the destruction of the private sector unions, which took about 35, 40 years to do. You go back to the Powell memo back in 1971, and you move it all the way forward here. Their intention was to strip the voice away from workers. You go back to 1981 when Reagan fired the Patco workers, right up until now, this 30-year period. This has been the destructive period. Because up until that point, as productivity rose, so did wages. The more work you did, the more money you made for the corporation, the more that you got back. And why was that? That's because you had a seat at the table to say, hey, I would like some of that. We want that for our members. And unions were doing that. They were negotiating wages that kept up with productivity. So as the companies prospered, as the shareholders prospered, as the CEOs prospered, the workers shared in it. Seems like a fair game. Seems like a fair scenario, doesn't it? Seems fair. You look at USA Today today, on the front page of their money section, companies do more with fewer workers. Smaller, more efficient staffs is the new normal. And they go into talking about this bank that used to have several employees. Now they've got three who go and do all of the jobs and do all of the everything. They're running around like chickens with their heads cut off. But there they are, working, 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 and nobody to help them. And the whole article talks about this. It goes into the fact that these businesses, they're reaping the benefits of these massive productivity gains. And the graph that's on the cover goes back and it shows that during the Bush years, when Bush was president, the productivity gains shot up, wages stagnated. And the longer this recession goes, the more of the productivity, the more of the wealth that we create, you and me, people who work for a living, the more wealth that we create, the less that we're going to get. And you go back, and this is what I was talking about before the election in November. The teetotalers were out there saying, well, we don't need us no redistribution. I won't keep my money. Well, the reality is, your wealth has been redistributed away from you. And I agree with the T thing. I got it. Even though most of my T Twizzler friends don't know what T stands for, I'm with you. I am taxed enough already. And I think most working people are taxed enough. What we need to be doing is we need to be looking at the people who are not. The people who have been getting away, like the Koch brothers, like the Buffetts, like the Gates. You know, Social Security is a perfect example of a tax that you and I get saddled with, and a large increased saddling at that, thanks to Ronald Reagan and Alan Greenspan. But, you know, you and I, we pay Social Security tax on every dime we make. Someone like the Koch brothers, someone like Buffett, if they pay any Social Security tax, it's a very small, minuscule portion of their wealth, because the tax stops at $106,000. So if you made $1 million a year, you're paying on $106,000. But the guy out there swinging a hammer, making 50 grand a year, he's paying it on every single dime. And as I've said before, I think the best thing we can do, lift the cap, lower the rate. Every dime of income is taxed at 4 or 5%. Yeah, somewhere in that. It'd be a huge stimulus to working people, more money in their paychecks. It would shore up Social Security, and it would be fair. But that's not what our Republican friends are all about. It has nothing to do with fairness. They want to keep these productivity gains. And you look at this story, and it just illustrates the fact that the very wealthy have rigged this game. This plays in their favor, and they're able to pick up the phone and call someone like Scott Walker and say, hey, Scotty boy, tell me the game plan. And Scotty will tell you the game plan for $43,000. What is wrong with us?
You're right, 43 in today's... In today's amounts, it's not a lot of money, but I do think Mr. Scott is looking far into the future for perhaps mistakenly, and we hope that it's a huge mistake, and this man has just basically crippled his political career. These are the kind of people that we don't want leading this nation.
And let's talk about something really important. Lindsay Lohan was back in court today.
The poor girl.
We got to talk about the important stuff.
The poor girl. I mean, a young, attractive, talented woman that's just thrown her life away. I mean, you can joke about it, but, I mean, she's a human being, and I feel sorry for her. The reason I can relate, I mean, I've had friends like that, that have done just that, have thrown their life away.
Sorry, not a story in my opinion. She's got her personal problems, and those are her problems. Shouldn't be all over the news, because I don't care. You know what I care about? I care about those teachers. I care about those state workers, those people who are having their rights stolen from them through no fault of their own. That's my problem. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bill Klein about the protests here. A local resident going to tell us his view and how things are shaping up, what the past has shown. We're right back after this.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
We're out today with Mike, veteran, volunteer, and adventurer.
I tell a lot of people I'm a gray-haired teenager, because I act like one.
Mike loves life, and Capital Blue Cross helps him live it to the fullest, so he's a big fan.
I'm a Senior Blue PPO member. I have recommended Capital Blue Cross to 27 Medicare beneficiaries this year alone.
Mike must really care about his friends.
Capital Blue Cross has made the Medicare process easier, and they're very sincere, and they want to help you.
Mike, we've got you covered.
The bottom line is, if you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 888-340-3978. That's 888-340-3978. Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin. What I'm saying is the front lines of the class war. This is where the battle is being fought right now. But if they can't stop it here, Ohio's next. Pennsylvania, we're not far behind. So watch up. This is something we may have to emulate in the near future. What you've got here is you've got a governor who's saying, well, all this outside influence is coming and surrounding our capital. I'm not finding that. In fact, most of the people I talk to are locals. And one of the local people I've got on the line is Bill Klein. He lives in the area, and we're going to talk to him. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
You know, when you see tens of thousands of people surrounding your state capital, what did you think anything like this was going to happen in Madison?
No, I didn't think anything like this was going to happen. I mean, I was surprised the first day of the demonstration. I went down to the Capitol, and it was a marvelous experience. I mean, it was very energizing. I felt very good to be a part of it. It really, really is. It's just energizing. It's great to be around these people, and I support them 100%.
In your lifetime, have you seen anything like this? Do you have any other points of reference in looking at what's going on?
The only, one thing, I go way back. I'm 75 years old, and I remember the Vietnam War protests, and they were very big. I was living in D.C. at the time, and they were very, very large. Same groups of people of all ages, a lot of young people, children involved, and it's very peaceful. I mean, that's the other thing about it. The first night, or maybe it was the second day demonstrating in the Capitol, I was just amazed at how everybody was very cheerful, very upbeat. Somebody put a brat in my hand and then a bottle of water. People were cheering, chanting. It's a very good group of people. These are the real people. And they're not a bunch of union thugs bust in from outside the country. That's crazy. There's a woman who does a rant show on the radio every afternoon here named Vicki McKenna, and she keeps harping on this thing. This is not true. These are people from Madison. They're, of course, union supporting, for which we are very grateful, and that's good that they're here. But basically, these are the people of Wisconsin, the people of Madison who are directly affected.
You know, it's interesting you bring up your local talker here. Across the nation, what's being said is, you know, there's chaos. When I came here, my wife was like, you're going there? I hear there's a lot of trouble there. And I'm going, I don't think so. I know people from Wisconsin, some of the nicest people in the world. I can't see the kind of chaos and the kind of turmoil that the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media is spewing. And to be honest, being on the ground here, I'm not seeing that. In fact, like you pointed out, this is a festive occasion. I've seen families with their children. I've seen grandma taking the grandchildren. That's what I've seen. That's what I've experienced.
That certainly is my experience. I mean, every day, there was a counter demonstration by the Tea Party people, and the woman who does the rant on the radio was there, and she devoted her whole next program to how scared she was. She had to have sheriffs escorting her and so forth. It was all nonsense. It was just absolute lies, because you go there, and I'm amazed, because one day we wanted to cross the street to get to the other side of it, a protest march going on. There are always marches around the square. And so walked from one side of the street to the other, and it looked like, oh, God, how are we ever going to do this? People parted immediately. There was absolutely no problem. I mean, it's a very orderly, very peaceful group. The whole thing has been that from the beginning, inside the Capitol. That's true. Everywhere you go, of course people are chanting and shouting and so forth, but that's just their enthusiasm, and they feel very emotional about the thing, so they're going to chant and shout.
And like they say, you know, like they said, this is what democracy looks like, having your voice heard.
Exactly, yep. And to see the people there, I mean, really all ages. I mean, kids, a lot of them, when the kids were out of school, a lot of them were very young kids carrying their banners, which they had made, and parents, a lot of mothers, a lot of women, mostly women I saw. I think that was because they make up mainly the teaching group here, but more women than men. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the jobs that these folks have. I mean, most of them are social workers,
right.
they're state workers, they're teachers, they're care personnel. These are the people who make up the public sector unions.
That's right.
Nursing homes, whatever. It's generally lower paid women who got these gigs. And now you've got a governor who wants to take that away and take the right to have a voice on the job away. And to me, nothing could be more un-American. This idea that we're going to steal your rights and we're going to dictate at every turn what you're able to do, to me, really un-American.
You're right. I agree with you totally. And his attempt, you know, when he exempted the policemen and the firemen, these are not women. These are not poor women. These are a bunch of macho men, by and large. When he exempted them, you know, it was very clear what he was doing. You know,
divide and conquer.
And now it didn't work. It actually didn't work because I saw police and I marched one day with firemen who had their fire gear on, who were marching in support of the thing. I'm sure there are some policemen or some firemen who oppose this, which is their right, of course. But I think basically they've shown that as the group they are totally in support of the public workers, and especially their right to bargain. That's what it really is all about, of course. I mean, he wants to break the union. He wants to do away with closed shop. He wants to break the union, and that's why he's holding out the way he is. It's very, very simple. He has a very easy way to end this, and that is to say, okay, you've got to pay more money. We're going to deduct more for your health care and so forth.
That's not what it's about. This is at the end of the day, no matter what what words come out of his mouth, this is about political payback. This is about destroying your enemy. This is a very Machiavellian thing to do. Take your enemy out into the public and gut him for all to see. That's what this is about.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree totally. And pushed by the Koch, you know, they're the ones who bought his election, the Koch brothers. I mean, he was funded by them, and this is what they want to do, you know, and they want to do it nationally. I'm sure they're doing it.
Sure, this is part of the big plan. This is why all that money flew in to the groups Americans for Prosperity and the Karl Rove groups, the American Crossroads groups, why all of this corporate money has flown into these think tanks with these really soft, wonderful names, very euphemistic names like Americans for Puppies and all of that. When the reality is what they want to do is they want to destroy this country, take us back to the days of the robber barons where you had a handful of feudal lords and the rest of the peasants who were scrambling for crumbs. So let me ask you, at the end of all this, the protesting, at the end of all this, is this going to change Scott Walker's mind?
No, I don't think this is going to change Scott Walker's mind. I think he's going to go ahead and keep pushing. He goes back to Ronald Reagan and the air controllers and Margaret Thatcher and the coal miners in England. And that's what he wants. That's his image of what is good and what is, you know, what he wants. And no, I don't think it's going to change his mind at all. It has to have some effect on the people in the legislature, I think, the Republicans and others. And I don't know. I would love to see us get up tomorrow and his mind changed to allow collective bargaining to continue, that part of it, which is going to be very easy to do. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Because he's already got the public sector unions and all of the teachers unions to say, hey, we're willing to make concessions. We're willing to chip in. All you got to do is take the collective bargaining part off the table, and we've got no problems.
Exactly. And to take that radical step to deny collective bargaining, it's an extremely radical step. I mean, we have that right. That right has been here. It needs to be here. I mean, you can't say all of a sudden, you know, there's no more collective bargaining, you know, and also he wants to end the closed shop. He wants to end, you know, the fact that you have to be, you have to pay union dues. To do that breaks the unions. That's what he really wants to do, and that's terrible. I mean, that outcome is really, really going to be a bad one.
Well, but that's their political ideology. That's their payback. You know, a second ago you brought up the PATCO situation, and one of the things that I've always said, had labor responded in a more unified manner, after the firings of the PATCO workers, maybe we wouldn't be in the labor situation that we're in, because I saw that one move historically I think we're on the page as that fire shot across the CEO boardrooms that said, go ahead, go after your workers, steal their pensions, steal their wages. You know, that was that moment. So in looking at this, I'm seeing this as the moment as well, the PATCO moment, where my children will look back in 30 years and say, Dad, you really, either you did a really good job or you really screwed this up. So where do we go?
Yeah. Well, we went on the street. Anyway, keep on the streets. I mean, and I don't know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go down in a few hours and just be there. That, I guess, that satisfies my conscience. That makes me feel a little better and about what I can tell my grandchildren and so forth. But where it's all leading, I don't know. I think it's leading in a very bad direction. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a very strong feeling that it's all going to turn out good in the end, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep fighting for this.
You got to keep the fight. Absolutely, you got to keep the fight up. You know, I noticed that we were one of the first places to break the story that the South Central Labor Federation here in the area issued a decision that they were going to have a general strike
and to
begin educating their members. Do you think that's going to help, a one-day general strike?
Sure. I think it would be fine. Yeah, I think it would be great. Yeah, that would be a very good step. I'd be delighted to hear that. That's cool. And even an extended general strike. I mean, I'm not sure how much support. You probably know much more about that than I do, about how much support they would get from not only their members, but the other unions and so forth. It would be very good if it was a real general strike. Call everybody. Yeah. I mean, stop the buses, stop everything. And that would really, really make a good statement, I think, and it would be a sign of which side the people really are on.
Yeah,
so I hope it happens.
At the end of this, Bill Klein, the reality is we are all in the shark tank. And right now, the shark has got his teeth into public sector unions. The shark's already eaten up the private sector unions. And then when the shark's done with the union people, they're going to come after the non-union people. They're going to come after the few that have benefits and health care and all that stuff. Eventually, we're all going to get it.
Yeah. Certainly, that's what they would want. I'm sure they would want.
Now, last words for the people of Pennsylvania about what's going on here, because I got to tell you, Bill, I see what's going on here in your government in Wisconsin coming to Pennsylvania. There, as we speak, there are right-to-work bills being circulated. There are a ton of anti-worker bills in the Pennsylvania legislature. What do you say to the people back home on what's going on here and how to fight going forward?
Well, all I can say is, you know, I didn't mention to you, but I mentioned earlier that I was born in Pennsylvania, and my grandfather was an immigrant who worked in the coal mine long hours a day for very little money, and my uncles, his children, worked in coal mines. And that was kind of the area that I grew up in. It was south of Pittsburgh in Webster, Pennsylvania. And so I started out with the view that, you know, you got to have unions. You got to have them. They're absolutely necessary. And I maintained that view throughout my life. And I think we really must fight very hard. This is a very important thing that's going on here now. And it is, in a sense, I mean, historically, it's a battle, and it's a battle that hopefully we can win. I mean, the right to collectively bargain has to be maintained. Otherwise, we'll all be like my grandfather, working long hours in coal mines for very little money. And God forbid that happens.
God forbid. Bill Klein, I appreciate you taking the time for us. Keep up the fight here in Madison. And thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
So you wake up in the morning, get to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're on by someone else. You want it all about. It's money. Work it out. The people of today are so tired and so rough. Their argument for freedom is how much will it cost. You want it all about. It's money. Work it out. Money. Money. All around. Before it tracks you down, down. Acting a crime, doing a crime. Hungry jungle hunters with one on faded eyes. Mother Nature's army retreats to hide and cry. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking the week off to spend with family for the holidays. For our new listeners, we're repeating the week in Wisconsin from February of this year. The Rick Smith Show was the only radio program in the country to broadcast live from inside the Capitol during the occupation. Hope you enjoy this look back and have a great Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Pull out the good old union has to be here to clear. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Well, you know, at the end of it, that's what it's going to come down to. The decision of which side you're going to be on in this whole thing. You're going to be on the side of the tyrannical governor who wants to steal the rights of his citizens, or the people who just want to do their jobs and they want to support their families. They just want to go to work and be safe. You know, and it's that simple, man.
You know, I know Bill's niece, and I know Bill's sister, and I know their background. Bill's father comes from, you know, the classic coal mines and that whole struggle, that horrible struggle. If you know anything about the history of the coal mining industry in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, it was very violent. And he went through those struggles. And here he is in his 70s. He's still fighting the fight because he remembers what the union did for him. And I think all too often our unions were so successful. And especially some of the younger union members were so far removed from the real struggle that sometimes we forget, and when we forget, maybe we lose just a little bit of appreciation for our union, and then when we come back to this, in a sense, in a sense, our enemies do us a favor when they come at us, because when we're united, when we are united and as one, we are tough to beat.
Yep, yep. And again, I do, like I said earlier, I do think this is going to be that moment in history when people look back and look at Scott Walker as the guy who united the labor movement. Anyway, today is a birthday. The new credit card rules are 1 year old today. And the reality is for the most part, they have done exactly what they were supposed to do a year after new regulations, according to USA Today, a year after new regulations curb some questioning billing practices. Federal officials say over-the-limit penalty charges have been dramatically curtailed. They go in to point out that the penalty charges overall are down. In January of 2010, before these regulations took hold, people who had credit cards, they paid almost $1 billion in fees, $901 million in late fees. By November, that had been halved, so it was down to $427 million. Also, the number of accounts assessed late fees fell by nearly 30%. Now, another reason for the halving of the fees being paid, there's a cap on penalty charges, $25. If you remember, most of them were $39. I'm sure you remember, Jake. You used to pay that quite often for being a day or so late.
Occasionally. Yeah.
Like right now.
They like me.
Like right now, being away from home with the mail stacking up. Now the bill could be sitting there on your desk.
Well, no. Actually, before I left, I did one thing.
Good for you.
I paid all my credit card bills. I had enough. You know, these credit card companies have got a lot off me. And I do try to keep it to a minimum. But I got to tell you, as good as I think I am at handling money, I mean, it is so easy. I mean, I look at some of these bills with my credit cards, and I say, where did it come from? It is so easy.
Yep.
Just flip that card out. Boy, it's easy.
Sure is.
Out of sight, out of mind, till you get the bill.
Well, that's why you got to be one of those credit card deadbeats like me. Whoever.
No, you're smart.
At the end of the month,
you pay it every month,
every
on time.
Dime.
And they're betting that dummies like me will forget it a couple of days and be a couple of days late, and voila, you just gave them. You're right, 30.
Well, it's $25 for the first one.
Well, the more expensive ones are 39.
If you do it a second time within 6 months, the regulation says $35. That brings the average late fee down to $23 a month from where it had been at $35 in years past. So what's going on is, look, consumers are saving. This was a smart piece of legislation. And over the summer, when this Consumer Financial Protection Agency sets up, we're going to see even more abuses curtailed. Also, consumers benefited from new rules on interest rates. What they used to be able to do, you'd run up this balance, and then they change your rate. And, of course, they would go back and retroactively change your balances. That is now outlawed. They can only hike up the balance on what you charge in the future. The old stuff stays the way it was. In fact, your existing, it has to stay at that rate, and you have to be given 45 days notice before they can hike up your interest rates, which I think is a good thing, a smart thing. And look, at the end of the day, it's about protecting the consumers. And for me, the best part of this entire bill was every month when I get my statement from my credit card company, how many people have noticed that box that's off on the right-hand side that tells you what your balance is, how much if you made the minimum payment, how many years you would pay for it. Have you seen that?
Yes.
That is fantastic. Because it gives the consumer all the information right there, very simple to read. If I make a minimum payment, it's going to take me 27 years to pay this off, and I'm going to pay all this interest and all this money. I think it's fantastic.
And therein lies the problem. They look at the bill. A lot of people say, oh, well, it's only $10. Well, you pay $10. It won't be too much longer. You're going to pay $10 in interest more. They love people who only make the minimum payments, and it's easy, and there's millions of Americans, Rick, that get caught up in that in that trap.
Yep, and it's, you know, I wish everyone would pay their credit cards on time, and so you don't have those problems, because there's nothing that makes me angrier than when I have to pay that credit card company anything.
But I'll tell you what's outrageous, and I'm not sure if they addressed it. They can actually raise your interest rate because of the debt that you have with another credit card company. I remember, I consider myself comparatively good credit.
It comes back to your FICO score.
Well, let me tell you a little tale quickly. I know we're running out of time here, but I opened one of my credit card bills one time, and I looked at it. I said, wait, this got to be a mistake. 33%. I mean, you might as well take a gun and rob you. 33%, because at that particular time, with another particular company, you know, they played the system. 33%. That is just legalized larceny.
Well,
and I have comparatively, I would say I'm probably easily in the top 25%. I mean, I have very, very reasonable credit card bills. Sometimes I go over, but comparatively, I'm in good shape. I know some people that just tens of thousands of debt, credit card debt. But, I mean, those are the kind of things that outrage people. That is absolutely... I remember the fight we had in Pennsylvania 20 years ago. We tried to keep it below 20%. We couldn't... This is 20 years ago. They were so powerful. We couldn't keep it below 20%, Matt.
Well, you know, when Bernie Sanders wanted to cap it at 30%, that wasn't high enough. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the woman who got the credit card at 79.9% interest.
Mm.
I mean, come on. You know, at some point, you go, do we need the credit cards? And unfortunately, in this society, you can't book a hotel room. You can't rent a car. There are a lot of things you cannot do without a credit card. And for me, I would prefer to go back to a cash society if we could, but it's never going to happen.
And that
they have given, instead of raises, you know, we talked about the productivity gains and how we're not getting our fair share of it. Instead of giving us the raises that come away, that come from productivity gains, they gave us these cute little cards that fit in our wallet. And we think that that's money. Oh, boy, I got money here in my wallet. I got these credit cards. Without thinking, man, I got to pay that back. And as you said, with a lot.
And then we wonder why, there for a while, I think it's gone up a little bit, but there for a while, average savings rate was in the negative, and it still might be. I mean, think about that. The average savings rate for the average American is in the negative.
Well, but again, you know, that whole thing of raising your rate goes back to your FICO score. And I suggest everybody checks out what that is. I don't agree with it. I think it's a BS, tale, but, you know, I've got an 805 FICO score, so I'm not going
to
complain.
Well, I mean, if you listen to advisors, they'll tell you, only have one credit card, as lowered rate as you possibly can, and only use them when you absolutely have to. Now, that
advice
means you've got to...
from the master financial planner
himself.
Well,
okay, but there's a caveat. That means that you have to have enough money in your pocket to pay your other bills.
All righty.
When they come due.
We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway, imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming. Today you will catch the beat.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Dark in the midnight sky. We feel the fire.